Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Golly, Sergeant Carter, it certainly seems like at least a week since I've been here. Oh, wait, it has been. My sincere apologies for my absence over the last 7 days, but it was a much-needed absence. I had to go and get some edumacating. And I did. I got edumacated all over the place. Had some very interesting class time. And, you know, the next generation got some good class time, too, because Margie went as well. And for 3 days, she was deeply immersed in leadership development. And you know what? If there's anything that Appalachia needs, by God, it's some leadership. Speaking of leaders in Appalachia, here in about a half an hour, we will be having a conversation with Bo Webb, the central organizer and the force of nature that is behind the creation of Appalachia Rising. AppalachiaRising.org. is the website. You can go there and have a look. I encourage you to. It starts this Saturday, and it ends on Monday with a massive rally and march to the White House. It's going to be something to behold. And Bo Webb is the man who is largely behind it happening. He has worked like a wild man for months on end now. This is we can't be any more clear. This is the line in the sand. This is the demand for mountaintop removal to end now. Not later, now. And that is the demand that will be made this coming Monday, a week from today, in Washington, D.C., beginning at the Freedom Plaza and with a march all the way to Lafayette Park, where we will make our desires and our needs and, frankly, the needs of this nation clear. We will make it clear that Appalachian people are, in fact, fully vested citizens of the United States and that we are no longer willing to accept half measures and no longer willing to accept our sub-citizen status that the coal companies impose upon us, our loved ones, our neighbors, our friends, relatives, family. It's not acceptable. And we will make that clear a week from today in Washington, D.C. So I think you'll enjoy the conversation with Bo coming up in about a half an hour. If you haven't been to Appalachia Rising, you really should go AppalachiaRising.org and just see a little bit of what's going to be going on there. Now, it's been a week since I've been here, but I haven't forgotten what day it is. Oh, no. Oh, no, brothers and sisters. I know what day this is. Yes, indeed, I certainly do. And no, it's not John. This is not John Philip Sousa. The Scott in Sweden kindly squared me up on that. I thought it was, but it ain't. But what it is, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Step right up, get your tickets, come right in. This thin veil of canvas behind you that you cannot see but you can hear about holds wonders of right-wing Moranity and other kinds of Moranity this evening as well. Morans in abundance. We are surrounded by Morans. Morans everywhere. Morans dabbling in the occult. Morans playing with their Ouija boards. Morans who were witches and think that that means Satanism. Morans, Morans, Morans. And on this special Moran Monday, we also have some Morans on our side as well. We are Moran Poor today, for it is indeed Moran Monday on the horn. Quit fooling around over by the cotton candy. You can ruin your teeth on a candy apple later, Junior. Get over here. You want to see these morons? No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. For nothing more than your monthly contribution of $10 to the horn to keep the horn going, looking for members of that nifty, thrifty 250, and we seem to be kind of stalled on the 50 part of the thrifty 250. I did some counting over the weekend, and it's not, well, gosh, I sure do appreciate those of you who have decided to join up with the nifty, thrifty 250, but we need about 200 more of you, frankly. Yeah, you know, because this doesn't all happen by dint of luck. In fact, it was a little dodgy just trying to get on the air a few minutes ago. One thing I want to make clear: I am never going to say, well, you know, one of these days, you know, if you don't pony up and if you don't. Help us keep the horn going. One of these days it's not going to be there. I'm not going to do that because, you know, you can only do the Oral Roberts thing once or twice. Well, five times if you're Oral Roberts, but who here is? The simple fact of the matter is this is live, independent, liberal media, and if you choose to support it, that's great. It means that it's worth something. If you don't, well, someday it will go away. It won't go away until they turn out the lights and until they turn off the interweb tubes and come and haul the stuff out for debt and things like that. It won't. I'll keep this thing going till hell freezes over on force of just grit alone. But it's my grit and it's your grit, and we need 250 gritty people determined to see that liberal media continues in this country. And I'm proud to be a long-standing part of that. So we are looking for the Thrifty 250. There's a button at headonradionetwork.com under the Contribute tab. Jump right in. Don't be shy. Others like you have done it. But we are well over halfway done with September. There's only 10 days of September left as of my counting right now. And we're a long way from that nifty Thrifty 250. On the other hand, we're experiencing nice growth over at BourdainMediumRaw.com. My essay there has reached something approaching, number 66 out of 1,642. It's a long way to number one, trust me, because there's 5,000 votes for number one, but you know what? Stranger things have happened. And you know what? I'm pretty sure that with your continued determination, because I can't vote for it, we can crack the top 50 on this thing. And maybe even the top 25. Dare I hope the top 10? Because, don't tell anybody, but there's prize money that goes with this that would actually help the horn keep going. So it's sort of an indirect, non-financial way of contributing to the continued existence of the horn. But enough of that. Enough of that. I'm just thrilled to death to be back behind the microphone because, you know, it's no kidding to say that I miss this. I sincerely do. And I'm going to miss, just because of things that are going on. Don't look for a live program in this slot on Monday or Tuesday, possibly not Wednesday of next week, because Appalachia Rising will be taking up most of my time. But, and this is the important part, we have worked out several tech solutions whereby you should be able to listen to everything that's going on from beginning to end of Appalachia Rising on Monday. And then we'll just roll the live audio back around and play it in this slot. Now, there will be live radio all week long and all next week because, well, hey, don't forget, the Rick Smith Show comes to you live from Pennsylvania at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weekday night. That would be a weeknight then, wouldn't it? Yes, I think it would. Sometimes this internal dialogue that I have with myself gets loose. But no, every weeknight, 9 p.m. to midnight, and starting this week, you get your chance to let your voices be heard back behind the scrapple curtain, shall we say. You will be heard by Central Pennsylvania people who don't know what a liberal sounds like. They've never heard you.
They've been told for decades now by Flush Flimball and the Hannity job, you know, that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity, and the Savage Wiener and the Becker head and all of those. They've been told you don't exist. But you do. You really, really do, and I know it. And so that's your chance to get your voice out there and be heard starting tonight. And it's going to blow their minds. Now, watch your language, because Rick is on terrestrial radio. It's not like here where you can say all the fun words that the FCC doesn't like. No, Rick is on terrestrial radio and needs badly for you not to say booger or the brown word or the intercourse word or several other words in the course of your conversation. Okay? Okay. Now, more and Monday. Where to start? All right, let's get this sorted out. I feel a little bit about Christine O'Donnell the way I feel about, you know, the Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, Sarah Palin. Sometimes it's just too easy. And this is one of those. You know, of course, over the weekend that video was released by Bill Maher. It was his show, after all. By Bill Maher of Christine O'Donnell talking about what she calls dabbling in witchcraft. I'm sure you've heard the audio by now, but it never hurts to sort of, you know, replay it, because it's just damn loony. I mean, this is the stuff that Moran Monday was honest to Jesus made. This is the very heart and soul of Moran Monday material. Here we go. Yeah.
Let me share a clip from Politically Incorrect, because since Christine O'Donnell, who, by the way, I think could do even better than Sarah Palin, because Sarah Palin is mean and Christine is not. She's nice, and I have the proof. I have 22 episodes. Christine, if you're watching, I created you. You need to come on this show. If you don't come on this show, I'm going to show a clip every week. I'm the only one who has them. I ordered them. No, somebody had one. They showed it on the internet this week on YouTube of her on with Eddie Izzard when she is saying, she's saying, you can never lie. And Eddie Izzard said, what if you were hiding Anne Frank in the attic and Hitler came to the door? And she said, nope, wouldn't lie. Let me show this clip. This is from Politically Incorrect. I don't know what year, like 1997 or something. You were a witch.
I dabbled in the witchcraft. I never joined a coven.
Wait a minute.
Did.
You were a witch?
Yeah, she was a witch.
You
were
a witch? Coven. I didn't join a coven. Let's get this
straight. Wait a minute. I love this. Okay. You're a witch. You go on Halloween.
I was a witch.
I mean,
that's exactly why.
How did you be a witch?
Because I dabbled into witchcraft. I hung around people who were doing these things.
I mean,
I'm not making this stuff up. I know what they told me they do.
What was they doing?
I mean, and one of my dates,
and here comes the fun part.
One of my first dates with a witch was on a satanic altar, and I didn't know it. And I mean, there's little blood there and stuff like that.
That was a date? Your first date was
yeah,
a satanic altar?
Yeah, so I went to a movie and then, like, had a little midnight picnic.
Let's have a movie and a sacrifice.
Okay, before we go about the business of enjoying that way too much more than is good for us, let's get something straight. We are all, and I'm one of the guilty parties, guilty of watching that clip and thinking, oh, well, she's sunk now. Ah, those right-wingers, they'll never vote for a witch. Now, will they? No, they won't do that. Golly, they hates the witches. But if you go down that road, you're being far more superficial than you've any business being. And you don't understand the nature of a right winger. Okay? Why do I say this? Well, for a good reason. Have you ever seen an evangelical bumper sticker that says, not perfect, just forgiven? Or, not a saint, just saved? maybe we don't move in the same circles, you and I. Maybe there are some parts of the country where fundy evangelicals aren't unrare as, well, never mind the analogy. They ain't rare around here. You see them plenty. Not perfect, just saved. And see, those fundy evangelicals, this is not going to run them away from her. Oh, no. This is going to run them to her. Look at that. Look at that precious little girl with the bad 90s hair. Oh, Jeebus. She was a-messing with the witches and the Satanism, and there was blood on the altar, and we don't know whether she was on her back or bent over it or what when she had her first date with the Satanist. We don't know. We're just glad Jesus saved her. Oh, hallelujah, glory. She was washed in the blood. Yeah, and then there's that other bumper sticker. I'm a work in progress. God's not finished with me yet. Oh, I've seen them all, sunshine. I've seen them all. And the ones I haven't seen, David in Tennessee has, and anybody else who lives south of the Mason-Dixie line. This is important. Because when we giggle and snicker, or some of us may gigger and snickle, I'm not sure, but when we giggle and snicker at her, we sell that. Because, you see, if one of ours was to say, I dabbled in witchcraft once, the evangelical fundamentalist response is to say, well, of course she done that. She's a heathen demoncrat. That's what they do. They don't love Jesus. Right? Right. On the other hand, when one of theirs does it, remember, the phrase is in play, the rule is in play here, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican. And it's okay with them because she's saved now and all of that's in the past and it doesn't matter and she's just confessing her sin and giving her testimony like it done says to in the third chapter of Flip-Floppians. See how it works? I try to tell you guys about this stuff, but sometimes I wonder if you think, oh, there goes Bob, he's just saying that crazy stuff because he did. No, they're like this. It's okay for her to do this. Now, granted, there's a big old problem created when she bails out on, for God's sakes, Fox News Sunday, the lowest rated Sunday news program, the people that more or less created her, and she bails out and can't talk to poor little softball throwing teabag and Chris Wallace about it? That's a problem. But you know what? It hasn't proven that much of a problem for Sharon Angle, for Sarah Palin, or any of the rest of these teabagging fools. Because the next thing you say is, well, I don't want to participate in the gotcha media. And all the little teabaggers nod their little heads, and when they're nodding their little heads, you can hear the tiny marbles rattling around in the thin gray slosh and settled between their ears that pass for brains. Now, I want, you know, just be advised on this. You're going to see a lot of fun stuff, and we're all going to gigger and snickle. But understand, this does not affect how wingnuts feel about her. Because wingnuts check their brains at the door. Wingnuts believe in talking snakes. Wingnuts believe that the earth is the center of the universe. Wingnuts believe that the sun revolves around the earth. They do. They believe that the mathematical value of pi, as expressed in the second book of Kings, is 3. And that, because God said it, that said, I believe it, and that settles it. Oh, look, it's another right-wing Christianist bumper sticker. You need to be aware of this stuff. You really, really do. Now, other things? Oh, we got plenty to go into this evening. But I want to say this in this context. Over the weekend, I had the privilege of watching a magnificent film. And you know, I don't spend a lot of time on this program saying, oh, you got to watch this, you got to watch that. Because I don't really have a lot of time for watching this and that. But I just sort of stumbled across a reference to a film and kind of had to be a real pain in the butt about getting to watch it. But I did. The director and the director of the film, the artist in charge who created the film, is a Spanish director by the name of Alejandro Amenábar. How do you like how I do those R's? Pretty good, eh? Alejandro Amenábar. And the name of the film is Agora. Rachel Weisz, not sure, but who is beautiful and a wonderful actress. She was magnificent in The Constant Gardener, and she was even enjoyable in the Mummy movie. She plays Hypatia, a philosopher of the 4th century of the current era. And the film is an exploration of what happened when the dirt dumb, ignorant, superstitious, intolerant Christians began their dismantling of the greatest center of learning and knowledge that the ancient world possessed, namely Alexandria, Egypt. This is not a fun movie to watch. This is not Gladiator. You will either be infuriated, you may cry, or like me, you may sit there pondering how much better off this world would have been had Christianity never raised its ugly head. Because when you watch what goes down, and you know, I mean, it's a film. It's got some historical inaccuracies, but not so many as to make its central message invalid. If you get a chance, watch this film. It is stunning. Now, before I go about the business of bringing Bo Webb on the program, let's go to the phones and see what our Blinkies are doing. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Hypatia, by the way, for people who don't know, was the last librarian of the Alexandria Library.
Yeah, and her daddy before her.
Yeah.
Yeah, before the Christians burned it down for having all that heresy in it. You know, the way they do with witches.
And killed her in the process.
Well, see, you just ruined the movie.
Well, hey, anybody who reads history would know about Hypatia.
I know, I'm playing.
Yeah. Okay. Dear old... Delaware twit. First of all,
yeah, we got to work on a name now, for her, but you've got to start. Yeah.
Yeah, she is not now, nor she has she ever been a witch. Why do I know this? Because I am a witch. She may have been a Satanist because what she described was a black mass. She was the living altar for it. I know a little bit about Satanism, not enough to take part in it, just enough to avoid it. They are not nice people. Wiccans, meaning people who describe themselves as witches, reject the concept of Satanism completely. We reject the concept of heaven or hell. To us, they don't exist. And this woman is talking about Satan? No, she's not a witch. What she is, and nobody has had the guts to say about it, she's a lying piece of crap.
Well, she's also ignorant as hell.
That's true. And sooner or later, karma is going to catch up with her, be it this life or the next, and she will pay for what she's doing threefold.
That's the way it works inside your philosophy, right?
Oh, yeah.
See, I like to see folks get theirs on Earth. I'm just one of those instant gratification guys, Susan. I just want to see people get theirs on Earth.
Well, it doesn't hurt my feelings either, but, you know, if I can't have it, you know, now I'm Scots enough to settle for, hey, two or three generations down the line. Because let's face it, the Scots did it that way too. If we couldn't have it during our lifetimes, we'd settle for during our descendants' lifetimes.
Yeah, as long as the descendants knew to sort of keep an eye out for it and enjoy it when it happened.
Yeah, but you know the whole thing is a piece of crap. All she's doing is basically, pardon the term, ginning up a witch hunt.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analysis.
And taking attention off of things that we should be asking about her, like her position on the other issues that are more relevant. Like, where has your money come from, woman? Last time I looked, the way you've been getting your money, it's illegal.
And that's just, but you see, that's kind of what I was trying to bring up here. That's all sort of just the gotcha media, you know?
Well, gotcha media or not, it's still illegal. And I want to know how, if she's violating campaign finance laws, that makes her a crook as well.
Oh, I'm sure she is. She's a right winger. But again, Let's at least go into this with our eyes wide open, Susan, and understand that IOKIYAR is completely in play.
Oh, heavens, yes. I heard a caller on Stephanie Miller this morning, a right winger, call up and say, hey, it doesn't matter if she's a witch as long as she votes the right way. And he came right out and said it.
Sure.
You know,
easy.
Whoa.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And that's the way they think. Well, I don't want that type of person in the Senate. Sorry, lady. As far as I'm concerned, she's just one more reason Democrats and independents need to get out and vote. Here's your real good reason to get enthused, people. That's what you're looking at.
There's a lot to be worried about out of this bunch, a whole bunch. And Susan, I hate to do it, but I gotta run along because I gotta see about getting Bo on.
Okay, bye bye.
All right, take care, Susan. Thanks for the perspective.
Bye.
And our best to Donald.
Yeah, I'll give him your best.
Okay, take care. Bye now. Donald's not been feeling his very best of late, and I'm sure I speak for all of the Horn family when I send along our fondest and bestest wishes for a speedy recovery. So we'll take a little break here, and hopefully our conversation with Bo Webb will begin very presently. It's about 28 minutes past the hour. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. Bob Geldof's got the wrong attitude. I do like Mondays. This is The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com, and we'll be back.
And he can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be shown? Whoa, 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 whoa. Tell me why. I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays. I wanna shoot. Ooh. The whole day down.
types to a waiting world. A mother feels so shocked, father's world is rocked, and their thoughts turn to their own little girl. Sweet 16 ain't that peachy keen, now it ain't so neat to admit defeat. They can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reasons do you need?
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Four and a half minutes before the hour on this Monday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob, and as promised, at the beginning of the program, I have on the line with me now, you've heard from Bo before, but until you meet Bo Webb, you just really don't have a real sense for what a dynamo he is, and largely Appalachia Rising is his hard work, and I just wanted to give him a chance to tell you guys a little bit more about what it all means. Hey, Bo, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I got a feeling I'm probably not as worn out as you are. You've been going pretty hard lately.
I've been going really hard, and fatigue has got me a couple times, and the stress, but I'm feeling really re-energized after the weekend of chilling out and spending time with family, and ready to take this thing home to D.C. now.
It's been a ton of work on your part for a lot of months now. These things don't just happen on good intentions and a lot of wishful thinking. There's a lot of hard work that goes into it. Where did the notion of Appalachia Rising originate?
Well, let me first say that there's quite a few people that's really been working their tails off on this event. And it began with a gentleman named Andrew Munn, who approached me about it. And Andrew is on the staff of Coal River Mountain Watch. And he came here as a volunteer. Very sharp young man and a great organizer. And he approached me about it, and at first, to be honest, I was a little reluctant because I know what it takes to put together these events, and we were talking about an event larger than anything that's ever been done, and on top of that, to do it in Washington, D.C., as opposed to a city in West Virginia or Kentucky. So geographically, it was a challenge. It's been a challenge. But Andrew... He really just asked me, he goes, well, just help me a little advice and just contribute a little bit. And I told him I would. And then like within 24 hours, you know, we were both just going at it. We were starting to put it together. And so it's Andrew Munn's idea. And, I jumped in to help him, and we've both been going at it, but it's not just us. There's Katie Lauer over in Kentucky has really busted tail. We've got people down in Washington, D.C. We have groups from all over the country that's come together, grassroots organizations and volunteers and mobilizers, and just so many people come together to pull this off.
Well,
we're going to have a great turnout, by the way. It's going to be historic. We're guaranteed to have the largest event ever. Opposed to mountaintop removal event in history. This is going to be really good.
It is genuinely exciting. I was talking with Andrew just a little bit yesterday, as a matter of fact, about everything coming together. And you're absolutely right that a lot of people have poured a lot of time and energy into it. As far as groups are concerned, of course, you mentioned the one that's so near and dear to our hearts, Coal River Mountain Watch. But what other organizations are involved, especially on a national level?
Well, National Resource Defense Council has been really awesome. They have just been stepped up to the plate. I can't say enough good things about Rob Perks and Melissa Wag at NRDC. They've been fabulous. And the same goes for Sierra Club. Bill Price, locally and regionally, I should say, has been just awesome. And Michael Brune, the executive director of Sierra Club, and Marianne Hitt, who's the director of their coal campaign, has been absolutely awesome. They donated a lot of money to Appalachia Rising and help us make this happen, and they've just been really great. Many people. Big Kenny from Big and Rich has been fabulous and stepped up to the plate. And we have well over 100 endorsements from organizations all around the country. Just Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace. Greenpeace has been absolutely fabulous. So we've managed to bring together all these big greens to come together at one place with these grassroots organizations and volunteers from all around the country. And it's just awesome. All this, I'm loving it.
And I know that Rainforest Action Network has done some prelude stuff as well, haven't they? I saw a story about them.
Thank you. Thank you, because shame on me for not mentioning Rainforest Action Network. They're just the best.
That blew my mind, Bo, when I saw that they had dumped some strip mining rubble on the lawn of the EPA.
They came to West Virginia, these four hardcore girls, and we went up on a mountain. And they dug it all themselves. I helped them a little bit, but they busted their rear ends. They sweated. They got bit by mosquitoes and no-see-ums, and they were determined to fill that pickup truck full, and they did. And they took it back to D.C., and we see what they did with it.
And the irony was not lost on me, Bo. I mean, if the EPA doesn't want that on their lawn, why would we want it in our lives?
Absolutely. They gave them a citation for creating a hazardous environment or hazardous situation or something like that. I forget exactly how the citation went. But I thought it was just, well, thank you. That's what we've been talking about.
It was a beautiful thing. So all of this, now all of this isn't just Monday. It kicks off on Saturday, right?
Yeah, Saturday morning people will start checking in. Some will maybe even check on Friday night, but festivities start Saturday morning. There'll be a greetings around 9 o'clock, 9 a.m. at Georgetown University Conference Center in Washington D.C. September the 25th. We'll have all day workshops, breakouts, a lot of educational material. There'll be some edited films in between. There'll be just a great gathering, educational materials on mountaintop removal, various speakers, including some well-known writers. And on Saturday night, we'll have a bit of a relief. We'll have some entertainment. People can get out and dance. We'll have some bluegrass music. Those that would like to see a film can see a film as opposed to that. And then Sunday, we'll have a Sunday morning breakfast. There'll be church services available. There'll be other things going on Sunday. There'll be some training on Sunday for those that feel that they may want to make that step to be arrested. We have found and heard from a lot of people that feel that they need to do that as their way of protest. And they'll be trained in dignified, nonviolent civil disobedience. And so that will be available for those that want to do that. And those that don't, hey, that's great. No one needs to do that. If they want to, we want to be able to give them that option and allow the training for that. So we have volunteer trainers coming in from as far as San Francisco to help train people. We have we'll have legal briefings. We have legal observers. We have the Lawyers Guild that's going to step in. And so we're looking forward to a great event and a really good time and meeting new faces and new friends and new comrades in a movement to end mountaintop removal.
And one of the things I find most exciting about this, Bo, is the fact that it's not a one-place event. This thing is going to begin in one area, the Freedom Plaza there in Washington, D.C., and it will culminate in front of the White House. Do I have it right?
Right, on Monday morning at 10 o'clock, but Freedom Plaza, which is near the EPA. It's a real nice, beautiful place, and it's big. We'll have a stage there. There'll be some speakers, and we're looking for Mr. Bob Kincaid to do the emceeing. And we'll have entertainment there as folks are gathering. It'll be our gathering spot. And there'll be some speakers and entertainment there, and then we will form our march from there, our lines from there, and we're guaranteed to have at least 1,000. We don't know how many, but it's going to be huge. And we will march from Freedom Plaza around to the big area of the EPA. There's a big grassy area there. And we'll stop there and visit the EPA for a brief time. And we'll have an ask there. We're not going to give the EPA a hugely hard time because they have been moving in the right direction, but not fast enough and not urgent, not with enough urgency. But so we'll stop there, we'll have our ask, and then we will move our march on down the street and up Pennsylvania Avenue to Lafayette Park near the White House. And we'll have some more speakers there, and we'll have an action there. We will have an action there, and we hope to have an area for those. It's perfectly legal to be there. It's perfectly legal to have a rally and a protest there. We think that we know of one place that we know of an area that you can walk into, and if you want to get arrested, you can do that, and it wouldn't be any felon or anything like that. Would be a misdemeanor. We've done a lot of research on that, and
yeah, they still practice. Unlike West Virginia, where the justice where the justice system is wholly compromised, D.C. still practices catch and release, don't they?
Well, yeah, but you know, you can never predict what will happen at these things. You just don't know. You know, I am absolutely positive that the coal industry will have some people in our crowd. I believe they will. And, you know, so we got to police our own, too. So we'll be watching out for any wingnuts that want to get out of hand. I don't really expect that to happen because we're going to be meeting with the police this coming Thursday. And we're having a cooperative session with the D.C. police and the Park police. And we're going to go over all of our moves and what we're doing. And they, too, will be on the lookout for any wingnuts that might get in the crowd. And they're going to know full ahead of time that they're not with us. So we're having a dialogue with the Park Police and the D.C. Police, and they're pretty much want to know what we're going to do. And you know, we're building an honest, straightforward, transparent relationship with them as to what we're doing. And they appreciate that. It makes their job easier, and it makes things go easier for us.
Well, absolutely. You mentioned the coal industry. Of course, they just got done last week having a big shebang up there in D.C. Do you think that this will counter their message?
Well, you know, I was there. I went over there last week.
Oh, did you really?
Yes. And we had a little press conference with Big Kenny in the afternoon after the coal industry had their rally. And it was mostly, you know, they talked about thousands. They were lucky to have 200 or 300 people there. But it culminated with Joe Manchin making all of these things about coal. And then Nick Joe Rahal, I think the guy was trying to incite violence because he kept talking about we will fight, and we will knock them down. And it's like, wow, man, what are you talking about here? You're talking about violence. And but their message is basically in D.C., they talked about coal mining. They got back here, and all you saw in the headlines was mountaintop removal. They didn't mention mountaintop removal at their press conference and their rally because they know that there's – most of Congress is they frown upon a mountaintop removal. It's going to be over, but the whole thing with them is that they are trying to pull this facade on the American public. They want to send these bulldozer operators and these blasters on top of our mountains, blow our mountains up. All of the air particulates from the diesel and ammonia nitrate and the sandstone rock coming down on mountain communities where people are breathing and people are dying at very high rates of cancer beneath these mountaintop removal sites. And then they dump what was the mountain into the valleys, covering our streams and the headwater source for drinking water for much of the mid-Atlantic and southern states. And they want us to call it, you, me, everybody, to call that coal mining and to honor them for doing it. It's very deceiving what they're doing. So we're going down to let America and the Obama administration know that what they are trying to tell you is coal mining has absolutely nothing to do with coal mining. And if they want to say that it contributes to the economy, they can say that all day long. But I'll tell you this. Everything that produces cash, that generates cash, produces to the national economy, and that includes drug dealers and pimps. And that's not justified, and mountaintop removal is not justified either. The fact of the matter is, people beneath these mountaintop removal sites are dying. They're dying from breathing toxic fumes. They're dying from sludge injections in their water. And it's time that our federal government stepped in and put an end to this, because it's really nothing short of murder, because the coal industry knows that people are dying. Joe Manchin knows that people are dying. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection knows mountaintop removal is killing people. The science is out there. It's
kind of irrefutable, isn't it?
It's irrefutable. But yet, they allow it to continue. So if you allow a crime to continue, then you become complicit to that crime. And in this case, I believe it's murder.
I believe, well,
I have no other way to label it.
It is homicide conducted with knowledge of forethought. Yeah, you're right. The last I checked, that's murder.
Premeditated.
Yeah. What can people, because I think, and I don't want to let this just sort of roll by without us spending a little bit of time on it, Bo. What does this mean, or expand, if you will, please, on what you just said about the effect that mountaintop removal has outside of Appalachia, on people's drinking water, on people's clean water supplies, on the downstream effects of this? Is it your hope that that we will raise a greater awareness of the fact that this does impact people outside Appalachia?
Well, I certainly hope so. And research has been done, and the Appalachian Mountains are the headwater sources for drinking water for Mid-Atlantic and the Deep South. So all of the selenium that's running off these MTR sites, all of the toxins that's running into our rivers from these preparation plants, all of these sludge injections that are seeping through these giant lakes with no liners, all of this is getting into the aquifers. It's all going downhill. The Appalachian Mountains, I mean, it's gravity. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out gravity, right? So people are getting this water, and it's not just here, and it's not just Mid-Atlantic and the Deep South about when it comes to water issues. If you know, our water is in serious trouble all throughout this country, all throughout the world, and we need to stop putting a dollar bill ahead of a sustainable planet, where we have a responsibility to leave this planet as good as or better than we entered it to our children and grandchildren. And we have to stop this insanity.
Well, and that's the whole point. You know, gravity's not a theory. Gravity is fact. And the fact of the matter remains that even if you can't see so much as a molehill from where you live, if you are in the Middle Atlantic or the Deep South, and even other parts of the country, you're being impacted by this, by what comes downstream at you, by cluster illnesses in places that don't even think of themselves as being Appalachia.
Right. If you know, at the Center for Disease Control, it's listed there that this little triangle, Southwest Virginia, Southern West Virginia, and Eastern Kentucky, have the highest rates of cancer of all types per capita than anywhere in our country. That also happens to be where mountaintop removal is. You know, it's not a coincidence. People up and down Coal River Valley are getting cancer. It seems to me to be at an accelerated pace. And in the last 6 months, I'm hearing more and more of cancers.
Well, again, more of that irrefutable science that you were talking about a moment ago points to the fact that the nearer you get to one of these operations, the sicker the community becomes. You can't
absolutely
get around that.
That's what happens.
And the thing is,
well,
go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry, but when you go to the top of the mountain and you bring these dozers, you knock down everything on the mountain, everything, trees, brush, bushes, bear dens, deer habitat, everything. Just knock it down and put it in a pile, and then you soak it in diesel fuel, and you burn it. And I'm not talking about a little pile. I'm talking about a 500-acre brush pile, and you burn it with diesel fuel. Those toxic fumes are in the air floating down on our communities. And then you drill thousands of holes deep into the earth. You pack them with ammonium nitrate and more diesel fuel, and boom, you set that off, and you blow up the sandstone rock underneath, and who knows what else. This is in the air, floats down on our communities, and we are being forced to breathe this stuff. It's killing people. And, you know, it's they can make all the excuses they want for mountaintop removal. It simply is not justified, and it has absolutely nothing to do with coal mining.
Absolutely right, because I know you've got coal miners in your past, and I do as well, and this isn't anything that any of our forebears would recognize as mining, not even a little bit.
No way.
Well, it's gonna be very exciting, and I feel sorry for folks who can't be there, because this is going to be an amazing event. Folks who can't be there and want to listen can listen in on the horn, maybe even watch it live on video. We're still working on that. But for folks who can't be there, is there anything that you want, you'd like for folks to do outside of the rally itself and the event? How do we keep the momentum going after Monday?
Well, what I would like for people to do that cannot be there is to pick up their phone and call their congressmen or senators, and don't ask. Lay into them and demand that this genocide in Appalachia of mountaintop removal end immediately. Immediately, real American citizens are dying. Our civil liberties have been taken away. Our civil rights have been violated. We have a right to live in peace like every other American and enjoy equal protection under the law. But in this cold, depressed place, the coal industry rules, and we don't have a state government here. We have
a junta?
A Nazism. Who knows what the hell you call this thing? It's like a coal cult. The coal industry rules, and everyone falls in line. This has to stop, and it should stop. But beyond the 27th, Appalachia Rising will not be over on the 27th. So I want folks, you come to the website, and they'll get updates on what's taking place and what's going on. We're hoping to bring in more artists, and we know that we have the Music Saves Mountains crew, and there's some well notable artists in that group that are going to be talking more and more about this and doing concerts and bringing this to the attention of Congress. Congress is well aware of it. That's why I'm really upset with Congress. They know what's going on, but they don't have the nerve, or they don't have the they just don't have the whatever it is.
We know who's stopping it in the House.
Yes, we know that's Joe Rahal.
Absolutely, because how many bills can you think of, Bo, that have 170 co-sponsors and can't even get a committee hearing?
Right. That's why I'm going to vote for. I'm going to vote for Jesse Johnson, but I would vote for Spike Maynard before Nick Rahal.
I think. Well, I've talked about that very same thing here because. You know, he does other things right, but this is so wrong with regard to his own constituency that it's reached a level of unforgivableness for me. It's intolerable. I've got grandkids like you. I've got kids, and at this point, the way he talks, it's a full out assault on my family. Now, how in God's name am I supposed to support that? Right.
I think we should all be mindful of what Senator Robert C. Byrd had to say in the last 6 to 12 months of his life. He saw the writing on the wall. He saw that this was wrong. And, you know, when Senator Byrd, he's in Washington, D.C., far removed from Appalachia and the coal fields, mountain communities, I hate saying coal fields anymore, mountain communities beneath these MTR sites. But once he understood, once he saw the devastation was taking place, he spoke up, and he was... Senator Byrd was about speaking out to end mountaintop removal, and now we have Cart Goodwin in there trying to twist Senator Byrd's words. Shame on him, and shame on Joe Manchin for getting on his soapbox down in D.C. last week and standing up for mountaintop removal.
Well, there's a reckoning coming, and you know, he may find that out. They may find that out on election day, because I think the day of us saying, well, you know, we got to work with them, we'll try to work with them, is over. It's just over.
Well, we can't. We've tried that. You know, we try to create dialogue, and all Joe Manchin talks about is we have to find the balance. I'm sorry, Joe. It's been out of balance for over 100 years, and we're trying to bring it back to some balance. So I think if I really truly believe that if either party, the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, stood up and said, I am opposed to mountaintop removal, we need to stop this, that's the one that's going to get elected. 70% of West Virginians are opposed to it.
You're absolutely right. Well, Bo Webb, I know I've taken just taking a half an hour of your time this evening is a half an hour that you're not that you're not putting into things that I'm sure still need doing. I'll see you on Sunday. I can't wait. I'm absolutely on fire for this. Every time I think about it, the little hairs stand up on the back of my neck. And the opportunity for this whole country to stand up and demand an end to it, I think your work, Andrew's work, and everybody else's work, I'm hoping this becomes the clarion call to the rest of the nation.
Well, let's hope so. And thanks for having me on, Bob.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure, Bo.
Sunday.
All right, you take care.
All right, sir.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
AppalachiaRising.org. That is organizer Bo Webb. I'm proud to call him a friend of mine. Go to AppalachiaRising.org. Like Bo said, it doesn't end after Monday. It begins after Monday. This is the kickoff. I don't care where you are in this country. There's a big segment of this nation's population that somewhere or another traces its roots back into the hills and hollers of Appalachia. Just as Appalachia ceded the continent after the last ice age, too, whether it be folks with Native American stock in their veins or folks, Scots-Irish like me, the African-American community that came into Appalachia, we spread across and we populated a continent too. Appalachia is a home to all of us. And I tell you what, I am as serious as a heart attack. If we lose Appalachia, and we are losing Appalachia to these thuggish profiteers, the Don Blankenships of the world, if we lose Appalachia, we lose America. You know, this is a human rights issue for me. This is a civil rights issue for me. But you know what? It's a patriotism issue for me, too. Because this is America as much as Washington, D.C. or anywhere else in this country is America. And in 2010, we simply cannot afford to let a noisy few demand their so-called right to earn a living, a tiny minority, at the cost of the rest of us and of our nation. So your phone calls are more than welcome. I encourage them. I look forward to your ideas, your discussions as we go through the rest of the program. We've got about 2 hours left. So by all means, jump right in. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Head on radionetwork.com.
I want to thank everyone for coming here today to join us for the launch of the Music Saves Mountains campaign. This is an exciting moment to really raise awareness on the egregious practice of mountaintop removal all over Appalachia. We're launching this campaign today with music's greatest artists to really tell the nation what is happening here in Appalachia, how this practice is devastating communities, devastating valleys, rivers, streams, watersheds, and how we can move towards a future that doesn't require it. One of the first artists to join us in this effort and really leading us in our effort for Music Saves Mountains is NRDC's dear friend and musical legend, Emmylou Harris.
The Appalachians are the sacred ground of country music, and that's why it's so important that we band together to stop this extraordinarily obscene practice of blowing the tops off these mountains that are so rich with heritage. We want to educate the nation, the media, corporations, and public officials about the need to protect these mountains from mountaintop removal. We really believe in our hearts that music really can't save mountains.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I hope you understand why I feel it necessary to be away from the microphone and away from here and be at Appalachia Rising. I don't think I could look at the sweet and smiling faces of my grandchildren if I didn't. I just couldn't. Just couldn't. This is critical. And I've really lost all sense of perspective and patience with those who say, well, you know, but we've got a right to. Because it flies, you know, whether you're Rand Paul saying, ah, you know, they won't miss a few mountains here and there, or whether you're, that freak psychopath Don Blankenship babbling on about how this is my America, blah, blah, blah. You know, what of the property rights of Bo Webb, who lives underneath one of these nightmares, where all of this filth flies all over his home area? What of anybody who lives near it? What of them? What about their property rights? I mean, there's a long history of the Anglo-American common law that says that, you know, your rights end where my nose begins. And the fact of the matter is, this is the important part, if you're actually following the law, this is illegal. And that's why we're making this stand on Monday and beginning what we hope will be a nationwide movement. A nationwide movement. AppalachiaRising.org. You know, Bo talked about the clear cutting. We're not talking about scrub when we're talking about them clear cutting these mountains. We're talking about the kind of hardwood timber that makes people who work in wood absolutely drool. What do they do with it? They clear cut it. As Bo said, they pile it into 500-acre brush piles. They soak it in diesel fuel and throw a match. That's how eager they are to get at this filth. And that's how little they care. You know, Bo mentioned particulated sandstone. We were driving up the mountain on the way back from our trip, talking about the Hawk's Nest disaster. Union Carbide, long before they destroyed and made miserable an entire region in India called Bhopal, Union Carbide turned a little town called Gauley Bridge, West Virginia, into the town of the living dead, where African Americans mostly African American men desperate for work, dying to take care of their families, went to work for Union Carbide digging the Hawk's Nest Tunnel through solid sandstone, and it was there that we learned about a new disease called silicosis. Because that sandstone is, of course, comprised of silica. And when you do it and you make dust out of it, it goes into people's lungs. And it stays there. It can't get out. The lungs are a closed system by definition. Once it gets past the nose or through the mouth, there's just not a hell of a lot can be done. And that particulated silica dust goes into the lung and it mixes with the natural moisture there. This is just medical science. This is just how they work. And it turns to concrete. It turns to concrete. And that's how you die when you've been afflicted with silicosis. And so great clouds of this stuff are sent into the air to settle back over our mountain communities here. And some of it blows past the mountains and winds up in the lungs of children. And Mama doesn't understand why Junior has to use that asthma rescue inhaler. And she doesn't understand it when she walks out of the room and leaves the lights on. And she doesn't understand it even here when she watches those ads on the TV that say coal keeps the lights on. And she doesn't understand it if she's a liberal when she's clicking through at, say, Think Progress or Crooks and Liars or any of these other or Fire Dog Lake or God knows where and sees ads for clean coal technology. She doesn't understand. She doesn't understand. Well, part of the reason that Appalachia Rising is happening is to help her understand, and him understand, and they understand. Because I guess it falls to us to build that understanding. And I know some of you will actually be joining us at Appalachia Rising, and I look forward to seeing you. I know of at least one long road trip that is in the making. I mean long. And I'm looking forward to everybody, meeting everybody who shows up. I'll be kind of hard to miss. Bo alluded to it. Yeah, I'll be emceeing this event. All I can hope is that I'm equal, to the trust reposed in me. That's my only goal. It is 13 minutes past the hour. Your phone calls are welcome. This is not Filibobster Moran Monday. The phone lines are open. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. It's all just that easy. Breaking news, going back to the earliest subject of our Moran Monday edition here, the waterfall of stuff about Christine O'Donnell is becoming a bit of a torrent. The latest now is that Christine O'Donnell, who has a sister who is a lesbian, said that she can't understand why gay folks get upset when she refers to being gay as a deviant sexual orientation. In 2006, she said the following, and this is what's new out, quote, "People are created in God's image. Homosexuality is an identity adopted through societal factors. It's an identity disorder. Are you gay? How's that make you feel, knowing you've got an identity disorder? That just because you don't love as weirdly or freakishly or associate as strangely as does Christine O'Donnell means that in her world you have an identity disorder. But here's the rub. That's not to say rub when you're talking about Christine O'Donnell, but what? It ain't just Christine O'Donnell. First of all, that quote infuriates me. But I want to be able to continue to talk through the rest of the program, so I'm not going to scream. It infuriates me. It infuriates you. I can think of a handful of people I'll get an email from maybe in the next 5, 10, 15 minutes that just wouldn't pee in Christine O'Donnell's mouth if her guts were on fire. I'm one of those two. But this is the important part. This is motivational for her followers. In the campaigns of people like that Miller freak in Alaska, and this freak in Delaware, and the other freak in Nevada, and the other freak in Arizona, and the other freaks in California, freak, 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 freak. All of these freaks have one thing in common. They speak to a base that is motivated by hatred. A base that is inspired by fear and distrust and animosity toward the other. Congratulations, you're the other. Isn't that nice? Isn't that just nice? Don't you love being the other? Yeah, me neither. Are you gay? You're the other. Are you straight but not narrow? You're the other. Do you have friends who are gay and you don't want to just see them slaughtered in the streets? You're the other. I mean, for God's sakes, the level of weird that's banging around out there is absolutely mind-boggling. Granted, some people have opined a little bit about Christine O'Donnell, but, you know, they'll be okay. The witchery business, and again, let me just drive this home. We're talking about people who believe in witches. I'm still waiting on their verdict on zombies. Me, I'm a zombie guy much more than a witch. And vampires and wolfmen and fire bad, you know, and the mummy. They believe in this stuff! UFOs! Well, okay, no, we won't include the UFO crowd. But these are all people who believe in witches. What do you burn apart from witches? More witches! Who knew? Who knew that Monty Python and the Holy Grail would turn out to be a political documentary about the bigotry of America's right wing? Who knew? Because that whole crowd there at the Sir Bedivere will burn the witch if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood. That's the teabaggers! Well, I've got a wart. I got better. You got to be careful with satire because sometimes you're so busy laughing that you fail to see the accurate portrayal of certain segments of your population. And the idiots, what floats in water? Bread, apples, very small rocks, cider, gravy. Those are teabaggers. That's the woman sitting on the lawn chair on the National Mall saying, well, we can't pray it to the Lincoln Monument no more. Where'd you hear that? Oh, I seen it on the news. Glenn Beck on Christine O'Donnell. It's creepy. If you're at a satanic altar, that's a couple of steps beyond witchcraft, dabbling in witchcraft. Is it just me? Right-wing freak Mike Pence, who won the Values Voter Summit, I think. Certainly, Mike Pence channeling his inner Ricky Ricardo. certainly she has some explaining to do about that. Oh, Lucy, you got some explaining to do. Karl Rove, Delaware voters are probably going to want to know what that was all about. Joe Scarborough, you know, usually I like to say, that happens. But you know what, if you're Joe Scarborough, you want to say it happens, because sometimes your beautiful 20-something aide, just who's in perfect physical health, just happens to keel over dead in your office. Right. So Joe Scarborough says, you know, I like to say, that happens. But this is a new realm. I'm a live and let live kind of guy. Well, unless you're, you know, Lori Klausutis. But this is out there even for me. Michael Gerson, I think the reality here is that this adds to an aura of oddness. But the question is, why is it odd? Why is it odd? Is it odd because in 2010, in the 21st freaking century, we still have people who believe in witches? Or is it odd because no self-respecting Republican would ever be a witch? We love Jeebus. You know, this is the same crowd. Look, I want to get the government out of my Medicare. I don't want no government programs. And they believe in witches and demons and black bile and ill humors and scary, ain't it? Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, yeah, I guess I missed it. So what, you went to a leadership training thing?
Well, yeah, Margie was in leadership development and I was in another track entirely.
Oh, okay. Is this related to your event coming up next week?
Well, not specifically, but it's more, you know, it's more activism related, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, did you learn anything?
I learned a ton.
No, I'm sure you did. Well, no, that's great. Wow.
It was really intense, and I had to confront some things in myself and ask myself a whole lot of questions, and some of them didn't yield happy answers, but that's what these things are about.
Hmm.
I was really excited to see Margie go, because, you know, she's almost 17. And this, you know, I'm a firm believer in you got to get the next generation on the tracks.
Yeah, if the Catholic Church can do it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it works for them.
You know what I mean? So I hear you on that, especially in lieu of that video I sent to you. You know, I think there's a lot of people who would be more than happy to indulge in that world, and it's because there's no edumacation, so to speak, you know?
Because
as you and I would be horrified by that, as we were by that video, other people, I'm sure, can sort of relate, you know?
Yeah.
And you're talking about, you know, a 17-year-old taking a different track. I mean, yeah, whatever we can do. I hear you.
Well, and see, that's the thing, and I don't... I am not by any means trying to tempt fate or the universe or anything, but in later explaining why she became a witch, you know, that still just makes me want to stand on my head when it comes out. The day I decided to become a pharmacist, the day I decided to become a fireman, a chef, a witch. You know, I can't make it compute. But anyway, so she was about roughly the same age as my daughter when she became a witch. My daughter this week became an activist.
But the thing, I mean, yeah, the thing is, though, I'm sorry, this woman that's now a Senate, which I can hardly phrase, a Senate candidate. Yeah, I am just sort of like, are we at the only in America can dreams come true? Is that what this story is?
Or nightmares? No, what we are, we're at that point in ancient Rome where Caligula made his horse a senator.
No, exactly. No, I mean, I'm being facetious. It's more like, who you know, they're backing these people. They're just pulling them out the hat. And I'm not a big Bill Maher fan. In fact, I don't like him at all. But that is damn funny that that home chick was on his show years ago. You know, what's going on? It's too weird, okay? I mean, it's weird from him because he's so buddy-buddy with that man-she thing that he was effing. And then now there's this chick. You know, what's going on with him, actually?
And, well, I mean, I find a great deal of humor in it. But by the same token, I have to keep repeating my warning. This is going to be okay by the weirdos because she done got saved.
Well, yeah, exactly. No. The whole thing, the connection, the Roman, yeah, you can keep going there because it's so true. I mean, you know, I mean, history is so valuable, and it definitely seems like it's secular, like the environment, you know, because America is really going the wrong way rapidly, and Obama's impression of Augustus is not going to work out too well. I understand where he's trying to go. I don't think so. I think that's the emperor I think of when I'm thinking about Obama and this particular time in Rome. He could go that route, you know.
But the thing is, Augustus had people like Mycenas and Agrippa and several other sharp people around him. Rahm Emanuel is no Marcus Agrippa.
Well, not only that, but I suppose Augustus, he did sort of manage the tyranny. It was kind of doable, and then when they die, that's when Rome would go haywire because the Republic was gone. They were left with these...
And there was no succession.
Right, and they were left with people who, okay, if you have someone like him, you're fine. But once he's gone, well, we saw what happened, this succession of people to follow him, good Lord. And I'm not saying that that's the same case for Obama, but we need to be careful.
I think the reference is even more apropos, Sandra, in the Senate. Because, just let me reel these off just to make your head hurt like mine is, okay? Because misery loves company. Christine O'Donnell, Rand Paul, Sharon Angle.
That thing in Alaska.
That thing in Alaska, Miller. How's about the Carly Cream of Wheat, Carly Fiorina?
Yeah.
Let's assume for a minute that all these get in. Can we just put paid to the idea of there being any damn dignity left in the United States Senate at this point?
That is going to be Rome big time. You're the optimist, but not any intelligence, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, see, just to give you a sense of, okay, while we were driving this past week, we went by a house, and it had a big mowed lawn on a long sloping, you know, it wasn't any use as a yard because there weren't any flat, but it was all mowed and just perfect and manicured, and I'm talking about a 6x8 sheet of plywood, not one of them little wimpy ass yard signs on the two little pieces of clothes hanger in the ground. No, this was a 6x8 yard sign on a neatly manicured lawn in front of an immaculate white house, and it's Rand Paul for Senate. Okay. Now, with that in mind, we're not done because affixed to this 6x8 plywood Rand Paul for Senate sign is a Gadsden flag.
Oh, no.
And
really?
And I told my colleagues in the car, this, I may be, well, you're going to have to stop me. Because I wanted to pull over to the side of the road, walk up to the door, and just knock on the door and wait for whoever came to the door and say, is this your house? And they go, yeah. And I go, okay, I just wanted to see you. You know, because, I mean, that's your sign down there, right? Because I haven't seen an honest-to-God knuckle-dragging freak in a while. And then I'd start running before we went to get the shotgun.
Well, yeah, about to say, if they have that flag going, I'm sure they got extras in the house with them. But the thing is that you know, I just don't know what is going to happen on this election, because, you know, at least some of the polls are like we were saying, you know, it's like yikes on the Democrat, but double yikes on these freaks, you know? I mean, are you trying to tell me that the Tea Party and it's how it's manifested is really appealing to, you know, come on. I mean, they're horrible. Which leads me to that Ishmael Reed thing I sent to you.
Oh, I read that, and you know what? I don't have a lot to gripe with him about.
Yeah, well, no. See, I don't either. My only thing is, it's more of a sort of a throwback to when I was brought up. Black men were sort of looked upon as sacrosanct, and the women folk were like supposed to. Anyway, he just reminds me of that. It's like, you know, personal issues. You know, my own, with how the women in the family were forever over the men, and the other girls were like, the hell with you. In the meanwhile, we're the ones sort of doing what needs to be done. That's all. And that's where that was just my own sort of gut reaction about it, just sort of a throwback to that business. But beyond that, a lot of things that he said made hella sense. And also, Reed is a very strong spokesman for men. You see what I mean?
Yes.
It's very macho. I mean, his whole persona is hella macho, which is probably another thing that's a bit recoiling for me. But anyway, that's my own personal...
Yeah, this is a piece by Ishmael Reed over at counterpunch.org. But you know, the facts that he brought out about income disparity, and in fact Reverbo sent me another piece from Slate earlier today on the same thing, only not just focused on the African American community. Income disparity and wage disparity is reaching another one of those, sorry to do it again, ancient Rome moments. You know, because when you get to that point where the mask is off and there's no pretext of any interest in the public good for anything but the wealthiest sub-percentage in a nation, then things get real ugly real fast.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing with this. That's why this whole discussion about the tax cut also falls in line with the last days of Rome, because, are you kidding me? You got mass suffering to the point where those numbers, those poverty numbers that came out, they're far worse than those numbers, Bob. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's the optimistic view.
No, and the 22,000 threshold is a joke, because trust me, there's millions of people who make maybe 24. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
And so we're looking at we're looking at so many more millions, and apparently 77% of Americans who work are living from paycheck to paycheck now.
Yeah, if you can even call it that, because they're not living, they're things are going by the boards. Sometimes, Sandra, it seems like little things. You know, you need tires this month, but you don't get them for 2 months, and in the meantime, you just drive and pray.
Oh yeah.
Or, you know, last month the power bill got carried over to this month, which means that this month you're going to have $600, And that eats up one paycheck in an awful damned hurry. And that's a whole bunch of this country.
Well, I just am sort of, and you know, of course, you know, I have issues with the whole Obama thing, but to just see him now in full election mode, you know, he's starting to get serious pushback. I don't know if you saw that little town hall.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you'd caught any of that.
Yeah, you know, that whole business about, listen, I'm sick of trying to defend your ass. Now, I know it wasn't said that way, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The question, you know, and it's sort of like, it's really easy for people to assign the whole blame on him, and that is totally, totally unfair. It can't be, but he didn't do himself any favor by the weak-ass positions, you see?
The closest he got was giving that hedge fund manager a little bit down the road. But and you know, the for the American people to hear a hedge fund manager whining about how Wall Street's been treated like a pinata,
unbelievable.
I mean that guy's not breathing the same atmosphere I breathe.
And not only that, but I mean the whole sort of braying of the rich, too, is another aspect of decline. It's like, are you kidding? Really? The Paul Krugman article was hilarious. I don't know.
Oh, that thing took my breath away. The
shut the hell up. It was just like, oh, snap, snap, snap. You know.
The angry rich.
Yeah, just the whole thing is just, it's great. The whole article was really, I mean, and some of the comments, you know, these people, the rich sort of biting back, you know, feeling put upon. It's really interesting because they've made these huge profits, but.
Well, I mean, I don't want to take you too far off down the garden path or anything, Sandra, but where did this Dinesh D'Souza book start getting such damn traction?
Well, once again, it's the right-wing media machine that we don't have, because there's no reason for that creep's writings to be this prominent. I mean, he's always been put out there. I can't tell you how much I loathe that person. But yeah, now all of a sudden, and it's such crazy.
Well, you know, Krugman writing. Points out this paragraph. You know, I'm glad that Paul Krugman is out there saying these kind of things, because, you know, to have it printed in the pages of the New York Times means something.
Well, it's a fairly big megaphone at this point.
And when he says the craziness has gone mainstream, it's one thing when a billionaire rants at a dinner event. It's another when Forbes magazine runs a cover story alleging that the President of the United States is deliberately trying to bring America down as part of his Kenyan anti-colonialist agenda, that the U.S. is being ruled according to the dreams of a Luo tribesman of the 1950s. And that is, that's nuts. In a different America, Sandra, the rich would not have the gall to say what they're saying now.
Well, that's the thing, and it's just kind of like, you got to shake your head at the sort of brazenness of it. But I think there's an undercurrent of unhappiness amongst the ruling class, because there's, you know, I think that they know that there's a lot of hatred, and they don't like it. I think there's a bit of that involved in all the braying, too, that they're not looked upon now as they used to be.
You mean that we hate them more than we used to?
Well, maybe not you and me, but I do think they used to hold a place in the society of, like, awe and inspiration for a lot of people. And it's not so much anymore. And I think a lot of the whining is in response to that undercurrent that's out there.
And the question, you know, the question then, Sandra, is, you know, do they just continue to bray? I mean, I had an email right around showtime from Ron in Raleigh, who said, I'm addressing the news that the recession is over and has been since last June. Who knew? That's the good news. The bad news is that according to Moody's, we could have a double dip recession if we don't let the Bush tax cuts stay in place. And so Ron finishes by saying, I don't know if you're a big betting man, but I'd give odds on the president extending the tax cuts for at least 1 or 2 years. Feeling lucky, Bob?
No, listen. That's what I think. I mean, that's how disgusting things are, where somehow we're going to have to listen and be subjected to why I'm signing this tax increase, because, you know, it's going to be some BS about the middle class needs them, when in reality the Bush tax cuts helped the middle class very little. Let's be honest.
Yeah, but
as they are, it wasn't that much. I mean, maybe with inflation as a different reality now, but it's just a load. These rich people do not want to pay. They don't think they have to. They don't need our labor. You know, on and on and on. We've all had this conversation. But to see Obama sign something like that is going to be another horrible day.
Won't that kind of do him for 2012?
Well, he's working hard at a one-term thing.
That's what I mean. And just a separate thing entirely, and only to be watching the end of a really, really good football game yesterday between the Redskins and the Texans.
The Texans ain't no joke.
Apparently not. You know, they let Washington just use them for four solid quarters and then came back and said, nah, we're going to win after all.
No, but see, usually they would have fell apart. That's what they did last year. So
But so I happened to be there, and I just caught it as it rolled over into 60 Minutes, and I saw the interview with Jimmy Carter. And I guess it was a rerun, but this was about his diaries and about how they how the Carters don't feel like failures. And I couldn't help just sort of watching it, you know, because he wasn't. He was done in by dirty tricks. Carter was. And you know what? They played a little excerpt of his malaise speech, and he was saying stuff about, my God, you know, go back, everybody within the sound of my voice should go and find Jimmy Carter's malaise speech. Because it does not, it's applicable or more so today than it was before. Because he said, you know, we've gotten into this loop of thinking that we have to constantly consume things in order to be good or successful or, you know, however it is we define ourselves. And the reason that thing hung in my craw is because earlier, David in Tennessee had turned me on to an NPR program from last week called Science Friday. And there was an interview with, do you know who Bill McKibben is?
That sounds familiar. I mean, I know that show. No, what is it? No, who is he?
Bill McKibben is the founder of 350.org.
He's
one of the people who's pushing for, you know, us to get serious about greenhouse gases and CO2.
Yeah, he also did that whole worldwide thing, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So on the Science Friday episode, and this is just one of those holy crap moments, the host, whose name I can't remember, had Bill McKibben on, and he talked about how McKibben had found one of the solar panels that was removed from the Carter White House by the Reagan administration, and Carter talked about it in the interview on 60 Minutes. And so they had this whole thing where they did this multi-city tour with a lot of dedicated young people, and ultimately they were supposed to have a meeting at the White House to give back that solar panel so that it could be put in place on the White House as a sort of a sign.
Oh, yeah, right.
That we're going to be serious about getting green.
And
they got to the White House, and it was, no, you're not meeting anybody. And they got him away from the White House as quickly as possible, got him off into some other office somewhere away from the White House itself. I have my suspicions it was the Council on Environmental Quality, because I've been there, and it's kind of catty-cornered from the White House. And you remember the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where the ark gets put in storage and it's just forgotten about?
Mm.
It's kind of buried in that warehouse. Well, they did the same thing with this solar panel. Because the Obama administration, I guess, is scared of Carter cooties.
Well, yeah, but this—what are they not scared of, Bob? This is
well, there's that.
You know, and it's just sort of like, good Jesus, already with the cautiousness has turned him into Hoover. Because what's coming up looks like a repeat of 32, from what I can tell.
Yeah, where it just sort of implodes upon itself.
I mean, hopefully I'm, you know, talking out my ass, but I just saw this report where GMAC, you know, the financial arm of whatever, General Motors.
Yeah.
They've put a moratorium on all foreclosures, you know, trying to finish that up. And they have properties in like 12 or 11 states. And it's not like out of, it's not magnanimous what they're doing. It's because it's out of control, the amount of foreclosures. They can't handle it.
Oh, I read an article earlier today suggesting that if you go out and you buy one of these foreclosed homes from the bank,
who own it?
Yeah, you can't get clear title.
Yeah. Right, that's part of this thing too, because there's court cases that are pending that are like about to blow the whole thing up to hell. Like, none of you bitches own any of it because you made it tranches into all these mortgages, and now we can't identify what's what, and it's going to be, now what? And so these lenders are freaking out because it's going to be, whose home is that? Maybe it's that homeless person's down the street. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It bodes badly for the creditors, so watch the Obama administration take care of it right quick. No, I'm joking, but...
No, and by the way, I was... a little corrections come in. They up the Carter solar panel. McKibben took it away, took it back with him.
Mm, okay. Okay.
But this craven cowardice.
It's just, you know, it's corrosive. Like the mass unemployment, the cowardliness is really starting to get on my nerves. So to hear someone ask that question of him, I have to say, of course, me, because I'm sick in the head. I was rolling. On some levels, but I also think it's for him to have to take all the blame now is really quite sick, you know? I don't know what he can do to turn it around. I'm not talking about for this midterm. I mean the one term.
Yeah. Oh, that's what scares me so much is, and you know, I hate it when I feel like maybe I'm getting suckered again, Sandra. But when you've got, you know, last week it was Phil Gingrey, that guy that was all liquored up on the floor of the House one night. He wanted a covenant from the GOP signed in blood to extend the Bush tax cuts for the rich. That was last week. Well, now you've got, apparently blood oaths are catching on. They're all the rage. And you know, with the Christine O'Donnell, the witch on the bloody satanic altar kind of thing, you know, I guess it fits. Now Steve King from Iowa, who wants the gay people to just quit being so gay and everything will be all right. Steve King wants a blood oath from John Boehner to shut down the government.
Well, yeah, the shutting down of the government. I mean, listen, this business was all whatever in the 90s because, you know, you could turn left and get a job. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But right now? I mean, the ripple effects. I'm just sort of thinking, are these people serious? And, you know, with the low turnouts that are predicted, I really don't know.
I mean, this is creepy business. The House now has, and Steve, this is Steve King's doing, he introduced a discharge petition in the House. And he's got 173 signatures, exactly as many signatures as we have on H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. He has 173 signatures, and this is a bill to repeal the health slash insurance so-called reform law. Right. He's got 173 signatures.
And will they combine that with? I mean, how are they going to get?
He needs about 50. He needs about 50 more, and it goes to the House, and it passes.
Right, but he ain't. I mean, I can't imagine Obama he would veto that, wouldn't he? I mean, I know he don't know how to use a veto, but I'm thinking he would have to pull one out, right?
Well, the creepy thing is the first Democrat has signed on to it.
Oh, who?
Gene Taylor, Democrat, Mississippi.
I mean, just on the strength of what they're trying to do, it's gruesome. But on the other hand, I'm not feeling the mandate. Once again, we're back to the bad policy from the beginning. The weak-ass policy coming out of the Obama administration where you're not going to get a whole bunch of pushback because you, or maybe, you know, maybe not you, but me, I don't care.
I know.
I don't like that legislation, you know?
I don't think it's better to have it go away than it is to have it in place and have something to tinker with.
Well, but it's not. There's no way it's going to go away. I mean, there's powerful forces that stand to make a lot of money, right?
They're not telling the teabaggers that. And, I mean, the powerful forces that stand to make a lot of money are the forces that pull the strings of the Steve Kings of the world.
I just don't know because I don't know how, they're going to get a taste of forcing people to buy, you know, a private product. You know, I think it's just the beginning of a new trend. But who knows? I mean, I don't know.
I guess what I'm getting at is these people are in earnest.
And you're saying that they're quite dangerous.
They're incredibly dangerous. And like I said, I hate to get sucked into it because it's coming up on election time because I'm sharper than that. But, let a few of these freaks get in. Look, what happens if you get Miller, Rand Paul, Christine O'Donnell, pick a few others, Carly Fiorina, and maybe two or three more freaks in the Senate. What happens then? I mean, everything that we in good faith voted for in 2008 in President Obama goes bye-bye. And there's not, and at that point, you can't, we, and I don't mean you, we, us, can't blame him.
Oh, no. It's, like I said, I'm trying to sort of, get past the blaming of Obama. I just don't really know, I can't get past how upset I am that he, opportunity, just slip out of his hand like he did, you know?
I know, and Jim just wrote in with one of those trenchant, pithy moments that Jim is so noted for, and he said, you know, when making efforts to be everything to everyone, you end up being nothing to everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's too true, and, you know, I mean, obviously, at least for me, I got to get past my distress about the Obama administration and try to look beyond it, and that's scary, because I don't know what's coming up next.
Well, you know, it's another one of those, and oddly enough, how appropriate, seeing as how I guess Halloween's coming early and everything, something wicked this way comes. And they're called teabaggers and repiglickins. And they don't mean us any good. And you know, if we're paying attention and we hear the Lynn Westmorelands and the Phil Gingrichs of the world talking about how they are actually excited about the idea of shutting down the VA, and making sure the Social Security checks don't go out. When you hear it, they're not kidding. They mean it for real. I mean, maybe I'm overreacting, Sandra, but I believe they are quite sincere. I take them at their word.
Well, what happened to Pelosi? How did she lose it with the tax cuts? I mean, that seems to be spiraling out of control, and now they're saying that the DADT is repeal is too close to call, and it's just like, can you do anything, Nancy? Anything?
It's just, this is, there's a lot of conventional wisdom that says the Democrats are screwed.
Well,
and I don't necessarily buy into all of it.
See, I'm not too sure about that, just because we're so fresh off of the Bush decade. You see what I mean? And the economic realities of what that did to us. I can't imagine that they will. Are they looking at the Tea Party as something else? Different?
You know, that's one of the things that Steve King said. He said, if we get wobbly about this, meaning repealing the health care bill and doing all this evil stuff, he says, if we get wobbly, they'll leave us. Talking about the teabaggers. I mean, he understands that. I mean, the teabaggers are the let's be clear on this. There is no appreciable distinction between the teabaggers and the Republican Party.
Right. Well, see, I could have done without. I mean, I understand the what's his name? The oh my God, he has this comedy show. He's talking about some march he's doing.
The Stewart.
Yeah, but I don't appreciate the making equivalent the right and the left. I'm so sick of that. Can we both agree that that whole
It's interesting you would bring that up, Sandra, because I had a moment in the opening session of this thing that I attended. The guy who was he used as his metaphor for where we need to get to this a sign that says merge. And it was really good. I mean, he's a good speaker, and he's a good instructor. But he showed us a bell curve, you know, because it was accompanied by the ubiquitous PowerPoint presentation.
Well, and you got to have a bell curve. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he showed us this bell curve because first he showed us that map of the United States that's all red and blue, and you know, it's blue on the coasts and over the top, and in the middle is the United States of Jesus Land.
Yeah.
And then he showed, another one that showed actual the voting spreads of real people, and all that red and all that blue began to look kind of purple.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, "But this is really where we are." And he showed this bell curve, you know, and you know how it is with bell curves; they're real skinny out on the ends, and they're real fat in the middle. And there's this blue over to the left, and red over to the right, and purple in the middle. Because red and blue make purple.
Mm.
You know that. but the you know, and I never got a chance to get up and talk to him, but he said, this is actually where we are. And thinking, you'd be surprised the places that I take the horn and our conversations in my head. But thinking about all the conversations we've had here about what left, I wanted to go up to him and say, listen, there's only one flaw in your theory. You need to take that bell curve and slice about that third to the left off of it.
Well, that's the thing, and it's just so tedious. It's like, what, you know, what in the world? Because trust me, if there was a left that they keep going on about, people would be in the streets, you know, a la France. In lieu of what the hell is going on here. You see what I'm saying? And they're not.
No.
And I think that's a big reason why. So I'm done with that. I'm done with the...
And so that was, yeah, that was one of those false equivalences you're talking about. You know, because that out there, blood red, pointy part of the bell curve on the right, that's real.
No, and those people, they mean to hurt and make people suffer. I don't feel that way. I'm not interested in hurting a particular segment of our society. I mean, mind you, I'm not too keen on the ultra-rich.
I mean, I'm pretty sure my dad would, and my mother or my grandparents were never communists. I'm almost entirely certain of that. But you know what? In the real politic of 2010, Sandra, they were. You know why? Because they liked that Social Security check. That's enough to make you a communist now. And when you live in a country where where one end of the political spectrum, the hard far right end of it, has defined cashing your Social Security check as communism, then yeah, that leftward third of the bell curve ain't there, and you get a little bit over to the left side of that bell curve, and it's just straight off a cliff. There's no bell anymore.
Oh no, and you need to explain to me, how is it that the Social Security that people have paid into just for decades upon is even up for discussion?
Oh my God, which one of these freaks was it today that called it a Ponzi scheme? Did you catch that?
Oh no, I haven't heard that one. I'm not surprised, but see.
Yeah, Dick Armey. It was Dick Armey. Social Security is a corrupt Ponzi scheme.
Right, but what is the discussion about? But you've paid into it forever. You never get that end of it. Have you noticed that? They talk about it as if it's just some entitlement that's just a gift.
Well, here's the quote. One of the corrupt government practices is stealing your money under false pretenses. I'll give you a two-wit. Social Security. Social Security is a pay-as-you-go Ponzi scheme.
That don't even make no sense.
No.
I mean, that's just some more... They really can get that gibberish down. Wow.
Oh yeah, that's that's the Blazing Saddles moment. I don't know what he said, but what you just heard there is some genuine frontier gibberish.
No, that's crazy. And listen, I know this. You know, I didn't mean for this phone call to be such a bitch and moan. I don't know what in the world is up with my phone call today, but I'm just sort of, you know, it's like, are you kidding me about all of this? The Tea Party stuff is. It's just out of control.
Well, and that's, you know, ultimately that, but that's my question, and I don't think this call's a bummer. I think we've got to have this kind of engaged, serious discussion if we're going to understand who it is we're opposing and who oppose us, Sandra. You know, there was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, when Social Security and Medicare were defined by both sides of the aisle as a clearly defined, and this was their phrase, not mine, third rail of American politics.
Oh, yeah, that's what when I thought of Social Security, you know, in the context of politics, that's what popped in my head. And now it's being slowly vilified, like...
Well, I mean, were those guys just wrong? Was it because they were cowards? Was Ike already in his dotage when he wrote to his cousin that any political party that... that endorsed an end to Social Security would cease to be a national party inside of less than a generation? Was he just wrong?
Listen, we got that cat food commission. That's coming up. Don't ever forget. You know, I don't know what they think they're going to propose, but I get the impression that they seriously are considering altering that program in some form.
They don't want to alter it. They want to end it. When Dick Armey, remember, because Dick Armey saying that has significance, Sandra, because Dick Armey is the teabaggers.
Yeah.
Freedom Works is his baby, and Freedom Works is the tea party. And as such, when he says it's a Ponzi scheme that needs to be gotten rid of, that it is stealing from the American people, he's not kidding. He wants to end it, and he doesn't want to end it in a generation. He wants to end it in this coming Congress.
I'm sure he wants it to end before he hits the dirt nap, which couldn't happen sooner. But anyway, maybe Lady Gaga can turn her considerable attentions to that issue.
I wish, you know what, if that's what it takes to change America, I don't care. I don't care if she puts on a dress made of barbecue to do it.
Listen. Speaking of, there is something with the meat dress, though, Bob. Please. She got some sort of necro issues, that chick. Hello.
She's a hillbilly. She's nothing but issues. We're all issues. Now, that's not to say that hillbillies are running around in meat clothing. But, you know, this is a very serious meat culture here. It may have been an homage and not a necrophilic thing.
Yeah, well, okay, anyway, but, you know, I just think it's like, you know, what a freak show. But, you know, I don't know. I guess if we need to rely on Lady Gaga, I guess that's how it is, you know. I mean, this shit is all so messed up. Hey, listen, the football right quick, though. What's happening to my boy Brett?
Oh, your boy Brett's having some tough times. Man,
what's happening?
Man, when you hand the ball to Adrian Peterson and he can't get it a yard and a half, nobody's afraid of you. I mean, they weren't. There was nobody thinking pass.
I don't know. I think the next game. I mean, they got to win, or people gonna start talking real bad, right?
But I tell you what blew me away was the way that Peyton spanked baby brother last night.
Oh, he's like some sort.
I mean, just beat him and didn't let up. Beat little Eli like little Eli owed him money.
No, that was bad. I mean, but he is Brown. Well, listen, you know, I got everybody and my brother trying to get in touch with me, so I'll let you go.
All right. Hey to the family.
Okay, bye.
See ya. Bye now. Sandra calling from California. You know, that's in a way, and I don't mean this as any sort of derision, but Lady Gaga finds herself in the same place that a lot of right-wingers find themselves, and especially right-wing talkers. They got to out-weird each other. I mean, Madonna pretty much, you know, did everything. And so, you know, the only thing that's left over is, oh, Jesus, really, the meat dress? Didn't Madonna do a meat dress? No, honey, no. Then I got to do a meat dress. And that's how you get the meat dress. Yeah, Marty noting, yeah, Brett Favre and Adrian Peterson, they miss them some Sidney Rice. All too true, too true. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
And now this is where I come and I put a bow on it.
All right.
Do you know who the fundraiser was for this weekend's? Sandra, please put down the water because this is hilarious.
Is there going to be a spit take involved?
Oh, there's going to be a spit take when I tell you how this all connects to what you were just saying on the last half of your conversation with Sandra. Who do you think is the fundraiser for Obama this weekend? The Capo di Capo. You notice they didn't mention his name. And remember I said politics is a sport, and it really doesn't matter if the
Republicans
win.
No, it's a blood sport, sure.
Right, but it doesn't really matter if the Republicans win. They don't care. It's nice here and there, but as long as the money's flowing and there's distractions to be had,
that's all that matters. It's a hobby for him. That, anyways, let me do a little bit of reading here so you can get to know who the fundraiser is. First, we got to make note of his name, Rich Richman, which to me is like Hertz Donut, Pussy Galore, McLovin from Superbad.
Right.
It's just a crazy ass. It's surreal. But anyways, this is where it all ties together what you said with Sandra. Richard Paul Richman is the chairman of the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition. Hey, that sounds good.
Yeah, oh, I want one of those.
Yeah, it does sound good. This is a group of financiers, real estate developers, lawyers, bankers established to lobby Congress to maintain a tax shelter legislation of 1986 and 1993. The legislation provides its many loopholes for corporations to avoid paying taxes by investing in tax credits that essentially push money around on paper and result in the saving of hundreds of millions of dollars in corporate taxes. Recent news features in 60 Minutes in the Lair NewsHour have shown how these are being used by financial institutions such as Wachovia and First Union Banks and the investment consulting from PMRG Schemes. Now, here is where it gets interesting. Matt Osborne, are you listening? Because this is where we talk about 11-dimensional chess being bogus. The Richman Group of companies needs to be closely scrutinized to see if it is availing itself of these failings in the tax laws. This is because it is an integrated concern, a consortium of corporations and investment banks, development management, and real estate. It therefore has many opportunities to create tax judges by pushing money around on the books of Social Security. Now, here's where it gets interesting, Bob, where we talk about Social Security. And everybody who's a Democratic supporter who thinks these fundraisers, Obama, and tying all these people together, you need to listen to who the major fundraiser is. Okay, this is the guy he went to. Richard Paul Richman has shown an interest in undermining or even eliminating Social Security.
Oh!
It gets better. On March 12, 1999, Rich Paul Richman and Craig Singer, I'm not making this up, people, filed for a patent for a computerized scheme to enable future Social Security recipients to receive payments at various times in anticipation of the calculated amount they hope to receive when they retire. Such a scheme would contribute to the undermining of the entire Social Security system by depleting the investment capital that keeps the system afloat.
Oh, my God. No, right there is the bow.
I know.
Wow. You reckon they knew this?
Here's the problem, Bob, and this is why I want the Democratic operatives that are listening to understand this. These are the people you're getting in bed with, and these are the people who are fundraising for you, and they're probably making fun of how you want to keep Social Security together when this is what their plans are altogether. Oh, by the way, Rich Richman, for those people who want to look on Wikipedia, you can't do that because apparently he's paying top dollar to stay off Wikipedia. How do you like that?
Wait, you can pay to stay off Wikipedia?
Well, you have sabotagers come over and delete your pages. He doesn't want to be known, let's put it that way.
So wow.
Rich Richman, see, Bob, this is why I wanted to bring this to you, because this is important. This was the main fundraiser that Obama went to. This was the guy. This was the guy who funded it.
But, I mean, whose fundraiser was it?
Rich Richman's.
No, for...
For fundraising for the Democrats.
I mean, was this a DNC fundraiser done, you know, like through Tim Kaine?
I'm not really specific on, but I just know that Rich Richman was the one who hosted it, and he was one of the major donors for the Democratic Party, and this is the guy. I mean, so there is this hypocrisy that is just so. I mean, the guy put together a patent, for God's sake.
And I wonder how much that software. I wonder how much that would because you know you don't just do this out of altruistic goodness. There's like you said, there's money moving around, and it ain't even on paper anymore. They're just electrons.
Right, right.
But you know, an electron falls through the crack here, and an electron falls through the crack there, and it's money. It's money in the jingling till every time the electron falls.
Hmm.
So you know, I wonder what the potential, and I'll bet the patent application would have something along the lines in it. I wonder what the money making potential is of it, because all along the thing that always just screamed at me whenever I considered what these people are about when they talk about privatizing Social Security is that what they mean is they want the money. They're tired of all these useless old people getting what they consider to be their money. It's a mindset thing, David. It's their money to them.
Right. And you see, Bob, the reason why I brought this up is the fact that the Democrats, they don't pay attention to this guy's background or his history, and frankly, they don't care. But what's important is the bloggers and the writers and the journalists and the pundits, they need to pay attention to stuff like this, because this guy... This guy has the control. He's the orchestrator. He can make Obama move to the left. He can move Obama to the right just because of how much money he puts in him.
Put the nickel in away. Oh, Jesus.
But you see, the thing is that it's important for people to understand is that there's a reason this guy does not want to be known. You can't find that much information on him on the internet. I'm actually trying to find the patent because I want to read this crazy thing. But, that's what I'm talking about putting your eggs all in one basket and saying, well, we just got to go with the corporations and we just got to go with these fundraisers. And you know what happens? Here's what's going to happen. They're going to turn on you as soon as you turn too socialist for them. And they'll go to the Republicans. And then you know what will happen, Bob. It'll sway back. And they'll go, we're sorry. We won't be that socialist. And then they'll come back and they'll say, okay, all is forgiven. Let's put together another fundraiser. $30,000 plate, does that sound good for you guys?
That's just a little frightening. Well, I gotta ask you, since it's a totally separate topic, David, before we go, you being a watcher of stuff, I got to tell you, I mean, I know if I say this to anybody that you'll take me up on it, because you give me a lot of stuff to watch. I don't do it in reverse for it. You must go and watch Agora.
I'm going to, and since you watched Agora, you have to watch Machete. I will send you a...
I'm waiting. I got to see Machete.
It's hilarious. I mean, the fact that you have...
clip of Cheech Marin saying, I'll see what I can do.
The fact that you have Don Johnson as a border freak is just comedy gold. But then to add to the fact of all the other guest stars, you have Robert De Niro as the corrupt senator. Oh my God, it's so many good metaphors, such good symbolism, and just so over the top hilarious.
Immigration's answer to Idiocracy.
Right. I mean, Robert Rodriguez did a really good job. And for all sense and purpose, it is a B-movie, yes. And it doesn't have that much substance when it comes to script, but, I mean...
You're not watching. It's like Playboy. You're not reading it for the articles.
Right. You're just watching it because you understand the humor and the concept that someone's trying to portray, which is this complete phobia of Mexicans and foreigners is... at an all-time high. So for people who haven't seen Machete, I fully recommend it as a good 90 minutes to spend your time with.
Well, cool. All right, David, we'll talk soon. Good to hear
all
from
right,
you.
Bob,
all right, later. Bye now. Rich Richmond? Sounds like a Saturday Night Live character, doesn't it? 13 minutes past the hour, and you know what? I'm going to take a little bit of a break. If you're on hold, please feel free to stay that way. We will come to all the phone calls. But when you got Christine O'Donnell out there, and it's Moran Monday. There's certain bumper music that has to happen. Before the bumper music does happen, we've had a dispatch from Kate. Says, don't scream. Talking about me screaming about Christine O'Donnell. Don't scream. Don't waste your energy. Christine who? Who the hell cares? They are the other. Well, they are. But she does note there are a lot of others here in Montana, but there are enough of us to sort of balance out the ugly energy. The Montana teabaggers fired their leader because he made some really inappropriate remarks on Facebook or some damn place about Matthew Shepard. Obama and big government are fueling the fire, but the anti-gay agenda is way on the back burner. At least that's what the front page story implied this morning. She says, in 3 short weeks, I'm out and about in the progressive community. There are folks here who appreciate intelligent conversations. By the way, Coal Mountain is running ads on the Coal River Wind Project, I think is what she means. Running ads on the Hulu movie channel. How cool is that? Yeah, I know. And Kate says, yes, I have 5 bars on my laptop, enough to watch movies. Nothing like living on the desert behind the tall rocks, where she ain't no more. And signing off, she says, deviant, disordered, and witchy here on the front range of the Rockies. Kate. Yeah, I saw, and maybe we'll get to it, breaking news, by the way, some sort of a really creepy shooting at Fort Bliss today. I'm sure this will continue to develop. It starts out about 9 o'clock this morning Central Time and goes forward with someone going sideways and starting, you know, gunplay. Jesus. But there's another story that deserves to be covered. Members of Stryker Combat Brigade in Afghanistan accused of killing civilians for sport. And interestingly, with Kate mentioning the fact that there's plenty of those teabagging types in Montana where she is, the trigger is when a character shows up who had done duty in Iraq and says he and told them that he got away with killing folks there, and here's how you do it. That guy was from Montana. It was Staff Sergeant Calvin R. Gibbs, age 25, of Billings, Montana. He wanted to form a kill team. Like I said, he told his new mates that it had been easy for him to get away with stuff when he served in Iraq in 2004. Yeah, no kidding. There was another guy from Idaho. It was all that kind of Upper West sort of, you know. But let's not, I'm even critical of myself in this, but it's more on Monday and we're having just having a little bit of fun. This is a far bigger story than some freaky woman who let her freak flag fly on a bloodied satanic altar, she thinks. You know, but I can't resist the opportunity to run a bumper like this. Kinda gotta.
Christine O'Donnell, this is going out for you from the horn. Spooky! Say
I get to feel.
I think I'll probably play that again when the show's over. God, I love that song. Man, that's just rich. Tasty. Toothy, even. You know what would be funny? You know what would be funny if whoever the guy was that did Christine O'Donnell on the satanic altar was to come forward and say, man, that was so funny. She was so into it the minute I told her I was, like, into all that stuff. And I knew, because we're talking about teenagers and teenage boys. They'll say anything. Oh, yeah, baby, I'm a warlock. Yeah, come on back. I'll show you my cape. Jesus. I think this probably says a lot more about her. Wait, it's Moran Monday. It says a lot more about her being a Moran, right? Yeah. So back to the phones we go, I think. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, kinds of greetings. Just want to say what's going on.
Hey, what's happening, Spike?
Well, I just have to mention it was a great weekend as a Dolphins fan who, by the way, my team stinks, and we beat Brett Favre and the Vike Queens. The Dolphins are a team that should be 0-2, and they're 2-0 right now heading into Week 3 against the Jets, who are another team of suspects. Then the Patriots go down yesterday. So it's going to be a very ugly year in the AFC East. And maybe the Dolphins have a good year in the division that's really ugly. But I have to enjoy Brett Favre losing just because he needs to go away. As a football fan, someone who at one point briefly filled in on a sports talk show, Brett Favre's got to go away. No one wants him around anymore, but he's...
Yeah, the blush is off the rose.
He's like herpes.
Jesus. That's pretty cold, especially when you consider, you know, the stories about him sending, you know, cell phone pictures of his, you know... But, yeah.
And it's probably pretty wrinkly, too.
Stop!
Grandpa Favre out there.
I know, but stop! I mean, that's just... No, I've got this... I was so happy, you know, I was just kind of rolling along, digging the ARS and the spooky, and no, not that mental image, no. That's worse than the time I heard somebody doing an impression of Larry King talking about some little starlet somewhere, and the guy doing the impression, yeah, she makes my withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave.
And then tonight is a rough night for me because right now I'm also watching a 1-1 tie between the Phillies and the Braves in Philadelphia. But that's better. I'm hoping for the closer coming later, Billy Wagner, because he always chokes.
Yep, right.
I've already gotten him once, so we can get him again. A few things in the world of politics. One, I got a promoted title to add to my name that I also don't get paid for.
Oh, wow.
In the county party here, which is vice chair of the Progressive Committee.
And how many other members are there on the Progressive Committee?
We have, I think, about a dozen.
No kidding.
Yeah, well, there's only certain people who hold, like, titles to go with it. But, yeah, we have, like, a dozen members. It's kind of like the club of diehard progressives in the party. There's a lot of them actually kind of serving on the county level right now as well, including the chair for the county was formerly the chair of the Progressive Committee. So, so I'll be doing that, which hopefully I'll at least have Sestak to win this year. It looks really bad for us on the governor front. Which, in a way, I attended the last meeting here, and some of the older Democrats who go to the meetings are well into their 70s and all, you know, these long-time ones. They've already kind of decided, and rightfully so, that he's just running a terrible campaign. We haven't heard from the campaign at this point in this area, and he's going to lose his state, or at least, if nothing else, this county. Like, his campaign has had no interest in this area. For that matter, I worked at Booth about a month ago, and people come up saying, oh, I'm Democrat, I'm a lifelong Democrat. Who's our guy for governor? And it's just like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, we had a primary, he wins, and the people in the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania still have no bleeping clue who's running as the Democrat for governor. So I think it's going to be a massacre for that election this year, unfortunately. Although Ed Rendell's basically been a libertarian governor, so it's not really that much of a shift in how business is going to be done. But the Sestak campaign looks good. That's the one everyone's very excited about. That, it really looks like there's a lot.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, add Pat Toomey to that list of freaks that I was mentioning a few minutes ago in talking with Sandra. Because you know, any one of them, whether it be Christine O'Donnell or Pat Toomey or Rand Paul, any one of them getting in will have an immediate downward departure effect on any dignitas that remains inside the United States Senate.
Well, the biggest thing that everyone kind of forgets is really the Tea Party got it by default because Arlen Specter switched sides. Had Specter been there, he'd always had this thing going where he'd get a certain number of people who would just change station for the primaries, vote for him, and go back to being Democrats, which is why he tried that switch. And that would give him the push against people like Toomey in the primaries. So he would probably be a better Republican in the general election than Pat Toomey. And they're going to learn this one the hard way, which I kind of enjoy. Yeah, their push to be so ultra, to the extreme right wing of America, is going to bite them right in the behind because, you know, certainly he was no progressive or liberal, Arlen Specter, but he was easily swayed by the simple fact that whoever gave him the most phone calls, the most letters and emails, he'd vote on their behalf. So for a while, right wing could get him. But other times, people like us could even get him. And that made him, we know with Toomey, it's going to be like Rick Santorum. If you're not the choir singing praises, you're never going to get a letter returned to you. I mean, at least even when Specter wasn't going to vote on your side, he'd have the courtesy to send you a letter.
Yeah, he'd send you a letter telling you to F off.
Right. Santorum wouldn't even give you the time. You didn't even exist. You were dead to him if you weren't singing his praises. The only time I ever got a letter from him was on the issue of puppy mills, which is kind of a nonpartisan issue.
I mean, yeah, it's puppies. Come on.
Right, right. Being inhumane animals, which I would question how true he is to that anyways, but still.
Well, I remember when one of the few things that the Republicans didn't say no to was a horse meat bill. You know. You know, I mean... But I sincerely hope Sestak can maintain his momentum, and I would like to have a couple of these races with weirdos in them that I didn't have to worry about.
Yeah, well, and we have a teabagger in the congressional race here. He's against Ken Jorski,
our buddy
Party tried to get him in the primary.
You know, but you think you've got problems. You know, somebody's always got it worse. Spike, I heard from David in South Carolina earlier this evening. He said, we've got a teabagger running for South Carolina governor. And we have one running for governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, endorsed by Sarah and the Tea Crackers. Oh, and of course, and this is the fun stuff, she wants to turn the public schools into Christian academies, privatize state agencies, and drill for oil right off of Myrtle Beach. She's leading, get this, she's leading by about 20% in the latest polls, and voters don't blame the 20 years of Repiglican control of South Carolina. They, of course, blame Obama. After all, he's not even an American and certainly not a Christian. And Palin is actively campaigning for Nikki Haley there. And by the way, Nikki Haley, just to sort of keep going with the Christine O'Donnell flavor, Nikki Haley is another one that apparently is well known for letting her freak flag fly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure David could give us more of the details, but yeah, she a guy pretty much. I mean, well, he went out into the media and said, "Yeah, I did that." And well, no, because she's all family values. Remember, the public schools have to be Christian academies. So you know, there's always there's always one more out there. And that's the thing. Everybody's got a freak on their ballot.
Yeah, well, there's one. It's not in my district for state representative, which sadly we can't even get a Democrat to run for that lately. It's in the next one over. There's a Democrat who's the incumbent, and they did a poll recently, and their poll numbers, which of course don't take polls too serious. Now, you better keep at what your plan is anyways, but he's up against a quote-unquote housewife who's like basically some rich white woman who relocated to the area from, I think, northern Jersey. She's, I believe, a member of that local Tea Party, among other things, and he's up by 20% in the poll numbers of likely voters. But I think in the same, too, a lot of people who have just a slight bit of common sense, you don't even need to be liberal, can see that the Tea Party movement is a bit uneducated, uninformed. It's an large result. It's also the if nothing else, it's not even the morals of a lot of people who support it. It's the fact they've been totally misguided a lot by their local media as well. Because the local media, surprise, surprise, wealthy right wingers more often than not. So it's interesting when you sometimes speak to a lot of these people. In reality, they might not even really believe in what they're saying, but they've been, when you've been told long enough, this is what you should believe is right. You start, for most people, start believing it. Maybe there's a few people out there who are the number six who refuse to just conform, but for the most part, everyone else just, does as they're told, and they'll be seeing you. So, I think there's a lot of that, too, that no one speaks of. And in a large part, we're not going to hear of that through the media.
But you know what we are going to hear about? You're going to love this. This one just landed in my inbox, and I got to share it with you. You know what we are going to hear about? I get more right-wing pitches every week, Spike, than I get anything for anything progressive.
Right.
This comes from the fine folks at Special Guests Incorporated. Guess who else practiced witchcraft? Hint, Hillary. I'm not kidding. I'm not effing kidding.
I don't know why they dislike the Clintons so much. The Clintons were great to right-wingers.
No, but if you watch that Bill Maher clip where she talks about her, the whole thing, and Franken's there and Ricky Schroeder and yada yada and some crazy lady that isn't Christine O'Donnell. If you watch, there's another clip that came out today, and what's amazing about it is that she. It's breathtaking in its stupidity, but by the same token, they all the wingnuts on that episode of Politically Incorrect go off down the garden path on Bill Clinton, and I forget who it was that posted it at Crooks and Liars, but said if you've forgotten what Clinton derangement syndrome sounded like, watch this.
Yeah.
I mean, these people and they've still got it. It's apparently terminal. Guess who else practiced witchcraft? Hint, Hillary.
Well, didn't we at one point have the Nixon criminal himself, Mr. Cueball Liddy? Wasn't he giving away, was it him? Who was giving away or pitching, selling targets with Hillary Clinton's face on them during that whole, the assault rifle ban? I think it might have been Liddy, but I can't be exactly sure. He was doing all kinds of other things, ripping on her, and Limbaugh as well.
Well, this is interesting because they're apparently wanting to spin this, Spike, as some sort of liberal media. Delaware Republican candidate for Senate and Tea Party favorite Christine O'Donnell is inexplicably fighting off smear attempts about something she admitted to doing in high school. Okay. Well, blah, 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 blah. Hillary had imaginary conversations with Eleanor Roosevelt and Mahatma Gandhi. As former U.S. Congressman Bob Beaupre puts it, Hillary isn't so much as questioned about it. Really? No? I remember listening to right-wing radio when I was driving up and down the road, and there were a few weeks there where you couldn't turn on an AM radio, no matter what channel you were on, without Flush Flimbaugh bleeding over onto it, you know, having a damn baby on the air. Well, Hillary's talking to the dead! Yeah, I remember this stuff, Spike. It's a curse.
And it still definitely goes on, and especially with Limbaugh, where he's on every AM station under the sun in the continental United States.
Yeah, and it's interesting, that they can't put this thing out and say, guess who else practiced Ed seances? Nancy Reagan. Remember, she was having an astrologer make sure that it was okay for Ronnie to go. Remember? Maybe you're a little young for that. I don't know. God. Spike, I gotta roll on because I gotta hit some of these other blinking lights so I don't leave people hanging.
All right,
take care, brother. I'm sorry. Take care, Mr. Vice Chairman of the Progressive Caucus. Exactly. Onward we go. Maybe. I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
I'm surprised they haven't brought in Mary Todd Lincoln.
She was into it too, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. She held several seances trying to contact the spirits of her children who had passed on and things of that nature. You were mentioning Nancy Reagan. Wonder why they haven't brought her out in her relationship with Joan Quigley, which was around $1,500 to $1,800 a month she paid that woman.
Yeah, I mean she wasn't just reading the horoscopes in the Washington Post.
And the people who paid for that were members of the RNC.
That I did not know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, Kitty Kelly does a pretty good research job on people she writes about. Nobody's ever sued her, and that's what she stated in her book about Nancy Reagan.
Lord Almighty.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Real Time last night? Did you see it?
No, I didn't get a chance to.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, it was humorous to hear about the witchcraft thing, and I thought to myself, this is going to come back and bite you right in the ass, because they're going to find some way to cover this stuff up and just minimize its effect, and it's going to end up hurting Democrats. And they had Michael Moore on there. Michael Moore was talking about, well, as far as the teabaggers were concerned, he would roughly guesstimate their percentages to be something like, and they had a moderate Republican over there who, I can't remember his name, but he is not exactly in vogue with the current trend of Republican think state, and he said, I beg to differ with you. He said, look, these people are over 40% right now, and they're gaining strength. And as your previous caller stated, they prey upon the uneducated, and they appeal to the baser instincts of humanity. And, they're using every trick in the book, and they're going to use it to gain control in the House and in the Senate, and push through their agenda. They attack Social Security by saying, well, it's not going to be there when you're old enough to draw it, so why continue to support it? And that's what they're telling these people.
Yeah. Make it, in other words, they're treating it as a foregone conclusion, Jim.
Well, that's how these people always operate. I mean, they just look at in the 1930s in Germany, how, they began to get their message across. They had control of the media. They had control of people's thought processes and their think states. And that's the reason you saw that sign you were talking about earlier in someone's front yard, not just a little thing stuck up on coat hangers, but a big sign that cost them a lot of money, obviously it must have been a fairly affluent home. Their beautiful whitewashed house and their well-manicured lawn. And, you know, the people who live in that house, I dare say, aren't really stupid. I mean, they're affluent, and...
No, no, they're in it. They're in it for entirely self-interested reasons, I think.
Fluency has a habit of getting its way. It always has.
Well, I would say that from the looks of the place, they are part of that group that Paul Krugman was describing in his op-ed yesterday as the angry rich.
Well, I don't know if they're rich or not, but I mean, well off right now. But the thing about it is, these teabaggers and their entire movement is just, what, in the past year? I mean, where was that part? When did that movement start? 2009?
Yeah.
I'd say maybe less than a year ago.
It started concurrently with that whole thing where people were carrying guns to town hall meetings and things like that. That's them.
Well, that was in, what, 2009?
Yeah, that July, August 2009, right.
All right, do it, you know, just to a timeline and measure how quickly they have grown.
And that's because tons of money have been poured into their growth. I mean, that's the whole thing. This thing was never grassroots from the beginning. When Dick Armey's Freedom Works is fronting it, you can pretty much write off any notion of grassroots. And I hate hearing descriptions of them as being grassroots, Jim. And I've heard it, the Tea Party movement, it's not centralized. It takes place in small group meetings in people's homes. Bull! It was entirely a creation of right-wing, the same crowd that brought you the permanent Republican majority from K Street, crafted the teabaggers.
Exactly. Like I've told you before, Wall Street and K Street. And I ask you, how could a woman like Sarah Palin rise to such a position of national interest and ascendancy? How? I mean, she's a joke. But she isn't a joke.
Well, she was a choice of cynicism for John McCain in 2008. I mean, let's just be clear about that.
A choice of what?
She was a purely cynical choice. John McCain, she was barely vetted. The excerpts from Meghan McCain's book that are out there now are just shocking in terms of how little vetting was done. John McCain needed somebody, and he didn't want, now I'm speculating here, he didn't want Mike Huckabee. But he needed somebody that would energize the evangelicals. And that was Sarah Palin. And once she got, I mean, she's the real deal. Once she got once she got her front feet in the trough, and what I mean by the real deal, when you meet a real pig, and I'm not talking about metaphorically, you can watch this happen in the sty. When you see a pig, or a sow, in her case,
right,
get its front feet in the trough, they will hair lip hell till they got the back feet in there with them. And from the moment that she was nominated as the vice presidential running mate of John McCain, it's been nothing but one long attempt of Sarah Palin to get her back feet in the trough. Because, you know, when you've got your front feet and your back feet in the trough, you pretty much control the trough.
I say that's the case with her right now.
Yeah, that's all it is. I mean, we don't need to do a whole lot of deep analysis of Sarah Palin. And they're all that way. Rand Paul, trotters in the trough. Christine O'Donnell, trotters in the trough. That's why she's had all those money problems.
Well, you know, here's the thing. When I first heard that woman, she was talking about she could look out her window and see Russia or something like that. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I see England, I see France, I can see your underpants, and that's how much about as much sense as you make to me. But yet, in spite of that, they have managed to shape her into some type of Joan of Arc type of character.
Well, she's certainly as nutty as Joan of Arc was. I mean, this is a woman who believes in demons, and I mean, we've all seen the video where hands are laid on her by the African witch doctor. You know, for all that, and that always struck me as a little bit odd, Jim. And this is the kind of thing that only comes out when you and I have a conversation. They're having such a hissy about, you know, Barack Obama's an African communist who hates his anti-colonialist. Did these people never see the witch doctor laying hands on her? She's into that. But again, it's sort of a self-answering question, because if you're a fundamentalist evangelical, you can do anything and they'll say, well, she's been forgiven, praise Jesus. They get a pass that we don't get. And I think you're absolutely correct, Jim, when you say that we need to be careful with this, because it could blow up in our faces. Look at them beating up on that poor woman after. You know, she did that when she was a sinner, and now she's saved.
Well, you know, they're going to go back and say, well, look how Ted Kennedy was forgiven. Look how, you know, that type of thing. And they're going to apply the same principles. That, you know, they've been reading this stuff, and they've been monitoring all this very carefully for years, and they have been laying their plans a long, long time ago, a long before 2009. I mean, this has been in the works for years. It has been.
Yeah.
This sort of thing just doesn't expand overnight without some type of triggering mechanism that is so strong, so well oiled, so well funded, that they're using the current administration and the economy, and they're trying to place the blame on Obama and Democrats and how the country is, when, you know, the people whom they managed to bring over to their side don't realize that our troubles started back when George Bush came into the White House and spent money like a drunken sailor, got us involved with these wars, and these wars are not successful. They are unsustainable. Look at what happened in Iraq today in the Green Zone.
Yeah, not such a nice day.
No. How many people were killed and how many people, what, 29 people killed, 190 people wounded?
And, of course, I know how the Republican spin machine handles that, too. Well, that's because Barack Obama cut and run.
Exactly. Well, you know,
it's the same thing as the news story that I mentioned to Spike. The news pitch that was sent to me by the right wing. Well, guess who else is a witch? Hillary's a witch.
I think they're going to have everybody who stands in their way attending Sabbaths and doing all types.
Well, look, this is no longer hyperbole, Jim. Look what they've got going on. A witch hunt.
You're right.
And you know what? I don't know about you, but that kind of makes my blood run a little cold. And it's the truth. Those who would burn books, because this is the same crowd, sooner or later end up burning human beings.
And I'll tell you something else. They're going to probably try to rehabilitate McCarthy.
Oh, there's no future tense in that. That's been done. That was one of those books by Manthrax Coulter.
Okay.
Among that crowd, he's already rehabilitated. He was a saint.
Well, I was fixing to say that, and you took the words right out of my mouth. And, you know, people like Jim and Roy Cohn, and, you know, they just tend to forget all the hurt and the evil that these people inflicted upon innocent human beings.
But see, Jim, that's where I disagree with you. I don't think they forget it. They know it, and they approve of it. Because the hurt that was put on people were not, by their lights, innocent.
Well, that's not who I mean. I mean the people, I mean they haven't forgotten it. I agree with you there. But the people they're trying to convince have no knowledge, no historical reference to the evil that these guys with the HUAC committee did in the 1950s. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
The ones that they are bringing into their fold. Oh, the leaders certainly do, and they understand the mechanisms of power and how they work the levers and how to manipulate people. And so, conveniently, they are rewriting history. They're dropping these, their misdeeds from history so people don't know exactly what they did and how harmful and hateful and ugly they were. And you've got an illiterate, uninformed electorate of people who basically follow not any teachings of history, but sound bites, propaganda, misinformation, and any other means of deception they can follow. You know, these people are just like those characters in the Manchurian Candidate, just like Senator Iceland and his wife. And I can guarantee you, once they get control of this country, they are going to exercise such a power and such authority that it's going to make martial law resemble anarchy.
And then all that getting the government off your back business is going to be right out the window. Because, you know what, John Fox asked me a question a little bit ago when he sent a story along, Jim. He sent a story... Headline from ABC News, FBI spied on PETA, Greenpeace, and anti-war activists. The FBI improperly targeted Greenpeace, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and two anti-war groups in domestic terrorism investigations between 2001 and 2006, according to the IG, Inspector General of the Department of Justice. The IG found there was little or no basis for the investigations and they were unreasonable and inconsistent with FBI policy. That's during the Bush years.
Well, I really think what they're preparing for is their own version of the Night of the Long Knives. They've been keeping lists of people who have opposed them, people who have not agreed with them, people who have made fun of them, and they are just waiting for their own night of retribution.
Well, exactly. And that's the, you know, that's the question that John posed. Where were these wingnuts, these teabagging defenders of the Constitution and the freedoms of the peoples? Where were they when we were on our side? We're howling about Bush's right wing law enforcement infrastructure spying on us. This is not a new story. You know, I remember when the Department of Homeland Security under George W. Bush spied on PETA activists outside of Heavenly Ham in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, he did. And they're using organs of the government, National Security Administration, things of that nature. Remember we talked about this years ago?
Yeah, and just last week I found out that it turns out that the Pennsylvania Department of Homeland Security was actually spying on anti-mountaintop removal groups here in West Virginia.
Well,
Ed Rendell issued a blanket apology.
Well, I hate to say it. You know, it does resemble to me that they are creating their own SS.
That's the goal.
That's how it appears to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
They're using all the tactics straight out of the playbook.
I think they are. And in disagreement with the gentleman, Michael Moore, they're not 20%. Oh, no. I mean...
Well, even if they are, they're 20% who have 70% of the guns in this country. That matters, Jim.
Bob, the whole thing is, to me, a political social and ideological metastasis.
Yeah. And it's in, like, stage three. You know, this is where it runs all around the body politic and there's no getting well. I mean, you know what a political cynic I am now, Jim. But honest to God, if they get the House, or God forbid they get the House and the Senate, they will do things that make other Republican Congresses look like Sunday school.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they have no consideration for, I mean, how do they plan? And I ask this as a rhetorical question, I guess. They don't care. What do they have any plans to replace the programs they wish to destroy?
No, they just want to destroy them. You know, Obama called them on that today. He said, I think if the Tea Party wants to be taken seriously, they need to start telling us, not that they want to cut out spending, they need to tell us what they want to cut. Because voters deserve to be informed. But of course, that's that sort of wishy-washy campaign talk that appeals to people with brains, and you can't get it on a bumper sticker, and it doesn't do nothing for Emery and Eileen sitting in the Barca loungers watching Fox.
I'll tell you what they want to cut, and I'm going to get off here. They want to cut Social Security, they want to cut Medicare, they want to destroy the Department of Education, and they want to emasculate any type of government organization.
Food stamps, women and infant children, aid to families with dependent children.
Exactly. But I wonder how they plan to deal with these people once they cut them off.
Kill them! I'm not kidding. The private prison industry is a growth industry in this country. They'll just build more prisons and warehouse more people, and the ones they don't warehouse, they'll shoot down like dogs in the street, Jim.
Well, that's exactly what happened.
Because that's what fascists do. And we are talking here about fascism.
Well, that's the reason I asked the question. And it points back to one date in history, June 30th, 1934. Night of the Long Knives.
Yes, sir.
Good night.
Jim, you take care. That's our buddy Jim. And you really can't argue. You can't argue with the analysis. Got to get out of here. It's time for Rick Smith, the Rick Smith Show, live from Pennsylvania, right here on the Horn. Thanks, everybody, for making this all go. Thank you for contributing. And thank you to everyone who plays a part in making sure that the shows happen every night and always.